House Committee on Business and Labor. Good morning, everyone. I really appreciate everyone coming here. Let me just start right out. This is right kind of in the middle of the session. I said these words in the opening, too, to the entire committee and those willing to listen. A lot of the issues we deal with here are very emotional, very personal, very intimate, and I appreciate that. But what we need to do in this room, in this building, is respect other people's opinion, respect them, and treat them civilly. I can promise you, I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me, if I hear of anyone being disrespectful to anyone in this building, I don't care if I agree with them or not, that's not going to help anyone's cause. Matter of fact, it's going to damage their cause, their credibility, and that's all there's to it. Especially staff. I'm an elected official. You can come yell at me anytime you want, but we have to be civil here. That's the only way we can do this process. This is a very highly charged issue, and I think I'm going to say a few words here that will calm some people, if hopefully everyone's nerves. First of all, this is not an attempt to overrule, get rid of, and take out a statute or deny anyone access to medical marijuana. I support that. I supported it in the past. I support it now. I voted for it on the ballot. That's not what this is about. There have been some abuses of this system. One physician, I understand, has handed out almost a third of the cards in the state. I believe, as far as I know, that physician has lost their license for good reason. There are several bills here, and we're going to hear a wide spectrum of thoughts. Be quite frank with you, any bill that passes out of this committee will not have everything I want in it. I can be right up front with you there, because everything I want wouldn't pass. But we're going to hear and listen a broad spectrum of thought here. My goal here, House Bill 2881, which is sponsored by Peter Buckley, among others, it has the medical review officer process in it. We're also going to establish a physician, establish a process where the patient has to show a physician-patient relationship, and there's several criteria in the amendment that we're going to hear about today. But if you're an employee and you never show an analysis that has presence of medical marijuana, you will never have to volunteer that information. That's not the direction we're going in. If by chance you do have a urine analysis or any other analysis that shows presence of medical marijuana, it would trigger the medical review officer process, just like it does for prescription drugs today. And you would have to show that you've established or are going to, and you will have to establish a physician-patient relationship to bring it on to the whole thing here is to legitimize medical marijuana in the community, which leads me to the other bill, which Representative Maurer is sponsoring, which I'm a co-sponsor as well. Our goal is to get this drug, this substance, in line with every other prescription substance in the state, and to be handled and dealt with in exactly the same process. And due process for everyone, not discriminating against anyone, not denying anyone access, but just make sure it's dealt with just like we would any other prescription drug. That bill would, either the state would grow, harvest, and distribute it ourselves, or contract that out just like we would any other prescription drug. So the problem with the bill is the federal government has said they're not going to do these drug enforcement agency raids anymore, which I'm grateful for. They would rather have the states handle that. What we're waiting for and need is clear direction from the federal government that states can and are allowed to and may grow, harvest, and distribute this substance in a controlled pharmaceutical, pharmacy-like environment, just like we would and do any other pain reliever or whatever treatment that we have going out there. So I hope I'm clear. If I'm not, it'll become clearer. But once again, I want to thank everyone for coming. And remember, the respect part, and by the way, yelling out from the audience it will not do anyone any good either. You have to wait patiently until I call people up here, and then you get to testify. I'm going to let the legislators give them a little extra leeway. I'm going to let the person that's going to come up and describe the bill and the amendment a little time, and then I'm going to limit folks to 2 minutes. And we're going from 8 o'clock this morning until, I will stay here until 10:15 when floor session starts. And then we're going to reopen the hearing at 5 o'clock, and we are going to be finishing sharp at 8 o'clock sharp. If there's still a long list of folks that have not testified, I believe we can get through everybody today. But if not, we are going to be rehearing the bill again for a work session. If there's a long list of folks that have not had the opportunity to testify, I'll reopen a public hearing then and hear from them then. So that will be next week, I believe, hopefully Wednesday. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2497, House Bill 2503, House Bill 2881, House Bill 3052, and House Bill 3274. And first I'm going to call Representative Hannah and Representative Thompson. And if Representative Maurer comes in, he's just going to come on up, guys. Just going to come on up and share with us as well. Go ahead, guys, whenever you're ready, gentlemen. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, colleagues. My name is Bruce Hanna. I'm State Representative from House District 7. I am here this morning to make a few comments regarding House Bill 3052, which is, if not exactly similar, very close to similar to House Bill 2497. I very much appreciate the Chair's chief co-sponsorship and the Vice Chair's signing on to this bill. It truly is a bipartisan piece of legislation, and it is critically important to Oregon business. In simple terms, House Bill 3052 allows an employer to maintain a drug-free workplace by allowing them to prohibit the use of medical marijuana in the worksite. Although there are many reasons for business to support House Bill 3052, I really want to focus on the safety aspects of this bill. As an employer, I know personally how critically important it is that your business is safe, and that means drug-free. According to recent information produced by the chair of the Drug-Free Workplace Legislative Work Group, Oregon's drug test failure rate for businesses has consistently ranged from 5 to 6% in some locales, and smaller businesses around the state report a 60 to 80% pre-hire failure rate in drug testing. Oregon's drug test failure rate is also 50% higher than the national rate. Marijuana usage is by far the most prevalent reason for a testing failure, accounting for 70.8% of all positive tests in Oregon versus 52.8% nationally. Okay. Drug and alcohol abuse is also one of the leading causes of injury and death in the workplace, nationally and in Oregon, and a majority of post-accident test failures are for marijuana. It is safe to say that marijuana in any form, including medical marijuana, is the leading threat to safety in the workplace. 77% of all Oregon employers say that on-the-job substance abuse is of some or great concern to them. The employer situation is complicated by the inability to measure impairment with medical marijuana, where, unlike prescription drugs, quantities and dosage are unknown, and there is no physician oversight after the card is obtained to use the substance. Most employers in Oregon cite litigation risk and fear of losing key employees as reasons for not adopting a drug-free workplace program. As it is evident by these statistics, there is a real need to address this issue. With the passage of House Bill 3052, employers would finally have the tool they need to maintain a safe and drug-free workplace. I would ask that you would vote in favor of House Bill 3052 and send it to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to be here. Colleagues, good morning.
Thank you, Representative. Good morning. Gentlemen, whoever wants to go first, please.
I'll go. Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, good morning. I'm going to be very, very brief this morning because I know my two colleagues and the others have more in-depth and I have to be somewhere else. I'm here today to support these bills in concept and specifically House Bill 3274 in the vein of trying to find or
Representative,
cause.
I apologize. You have to identify yourself.
Well, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. I do.
I should know better than that. I only sit on half a dozen committees. Jim Thompson, State Representative, House District 23.
Thank you.
Okay. In 2001, I worked on another bill similar to 3274, which was aimed at bringing medical marijuana production under some kind of control and monitoring. It was too early in the process at that time. We had problems with DEA situations, misunderstandings and whatnot, and that bill didn't go anywhere. Since that time, we've seen a major proliferation of medical marijuana in Oregon, and I believe we have less control over what's going on out there than we ever did. My constituents are divided on this. I have a lot of medical marijuana users in my district. I have a lot of people that are opposed to it, absolutely. But there are other people that are kind of in between. I have people that are having a hard time still obtaining it or obtaining the quality that they think they want. I have people who have medical marijuana cards who have teenagers in the home. They don't want to grow it. They don't want it around in quantity because they're afraid of influence over their children and their children's friends. So it's not a perfect system. What I hope to get out of these bills initially is an open discussion of where we are with medical marijuana in Oregon and where we want to be, regardless of which of these packages or individual bills passes. So I think it's time that we do that. The numbers are sky high. Law enforcement in my district is complaining about problems they're having in enforcing drug laws with the intertwined medical marijuana situations. And I'm getting a lot of complaints lately since this became more public with people who are concerned about the lack of privacy issues around medical marijuana. We have some people who, frankly, I think are abusing the privilege of growing their medical marijuana in the flower bed in the front of the house next to the street and defying anyone to do anything about it. And it's probably not safe when we're dealing with teenage children who are impressionable. So my interest in this is to see the discussion go forward and hopefully come up with a stronger medical marijuana position for the state of Oregon and at least understand where we are with what's going on out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Ron Maurer, House District 3, serving most of Josephine County. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this so quickly. The story went viral, national, and which somewhat surprising. But I think this is a national issue that we're dealing with. California has taken a step that I do not support, and it's essentially full legalization. I'm not sure it's going to go anywhere in California, but that's a direction I do not want to see it. We have a system in the state of Oregon that was voted in by the people of this state, and it is still in direct violation of federal law. But we've established a program to allow for the use of medical marijuana. The system that we have today is out of control. We need to put some sideboards on that system. 3274 was about beginning the conversation of putting sideboards on that system so that the people that need the drugs can get it. They are assured what they're getting and quality that can be assured by some larger system and in amounts that are reasonable and do not permit the sale on the black market. That is really the crux of the problem, is that we have a law that is being abused by some to the detriment of those who have a true need. In my district, very conservative district, there are a lot of people who are adamantly opposed to medical marijuana. They're opposed to marijuana in general. But the point is, we voted on it. We have a program. We need to figure out how to implement that program appropriately and safely for the citizens of Oregon. This is still in violation of federal law, but I think Oregon needs to step out in front and push the Obama administration to make a decision on what they're going to do, and then Oregon can move forward. Out of this, like I said, I want a work group. I want a work group to get advocates, to get people together that can figure out maybe a plausible resolution to the problem so that we can help both sides. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, all of you. Representative Mauron, I agree we do and will establish some kind of work group. As I said in my opening remarks, the federal government, I believe, will move on this. And my whole goal is to get it controlled, because now the patients, God knows what they're getting, and we need to control it and make sure that some person out there isn't saying, I'm a distributor for these folks, and out there selling on the black market as well. So, any questions of the? And I really appreciate you, gentlemen, coming here. Yes.
One other comment. I have no clue how much medical marijuana is being used in the state of Oregon. In fact, I don't think anybody really does. But I had a figure yesterday that I'll just use as an example. It came from an advocate, said 10,000 pounds of medical marijuana are used in Oregon a month. That is a whole lot of marijuana being used in the state of Oregon. Now, using my $98 figure, which is high, low, I don't know, that's not really the point. But I just use $98 an ounce. That translates to a figure of $188 million a year in funds that could be shifted around, that could create jobs, that could do many of the things that we're talking about in this session. And this is not a jobs bill. This is not a tax bill, per se. But the point is that even if you cut it in half, you're still talking real money in the state of Oregon. So this is an issue. It can be funded internally at no cost to the state, but we need to at least begin the conversation.
You know, Representative, whatever that number ends up being, I believe we could, one, lower the cost that we're getting it for now, pay for the entire program, control the substance, and take some, if there's anything left over, put it towards mental health, drug and alcohol treatment, folks with disabilities, any number of health issues, and I'm glad I'm not on any health care committees, I'm grateful to say, but the folks that need this, let's start looking, see, take that money and try and help them mitigate, relieve, or treat and improve their situation. Any questions of these gentlemen? I know they have a lot of work to do, too. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'm gonna, just so everybody knows how this is going to work, we have a policy here. If you're 100 miles or more away from the Capitol, you get to go first. That's what we're going to do, because maybe these folks need to go home. And then I'm going to have the person that's really helped us draft this this amendment and the gentleman from Department of Human Services go after that. And then I'm going to have some folks from industry get up here and talk. And then I'm going to go right down the list as you wrote. Well, there's a panel I'm going to call up, and then right down the list after that. So there's a however you signed up, that's how you're going to get. Okay, I'm going to call Melody Silverwolf. These are folks 100 miles or more away. And if there's anyone else 100 miles or more away, we're on the honor system here. Raise your hand, I'll get you up. Melody Silverwolf, John Sajo, and Laird Funk. I hope I pronounced everyone's names correctly, and forgive me if I didn't. Come on, come right on up. Okay, John Sajo, Laird Funk. Sir, what's your name?
My name's Laird Funk.
Okay,
I saw Mr. Sajo here earlier.
One of you nice folks want to just start, and we'll get Mr. Sajo in here. He's probably...
Melody, go ahead.
Okay, I'll start.
Well, here he comes. Yeah, go ahead.
My name's Melody Silverwolf, and I've been a patient since 1999 in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. And I'm also an activist. I'm sure some of you have seen me before. Since there's a number of bills that we're discussing today, I will, rather than take each one in turn, I'll just make some remarks that apply to this issue in general, and that might be more efficient.
I appreciate that, believe me.
I appreciate Representative Schaffer's comments about how this, all of these bills are designed to improve the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. I'm sure all of those of us who are patients under that program, there's over 20,000 of us, would really appreciate that. However, I've found in my years as an activist that many times what seems obvious to those in the know is not always obvious to those who are not so intimately acquainted with an issue. Several of these bills that are before us today would, the goal would be to provide some sort of alternative source for medical cannabis for the patient, rather than to allow the patient to cultivate their own cannabis or to choose the person who would cultivate it for them. I have to say, speaking as a patient of a decade's duration and somebody who interacts on a daily basis with many, many patients, I work in a medical cannabis clinic, and I also am heavily involved with an advocate group, Oregon Normal. I probably come in contact with hundreds of new people, new faces every month who are patients. I think that we are all pretty much united in agreeing that it is very important to us that we have some measure of control over the medicine we have access to. For example, many people suffer from glaucoma who have patient cards. Glaucoma is an illness that responds to substances in the cannabis that don't necessarily relate to the high THC content, what most people think of the part that creates the high. People who have glaucoma, for example, can successfully and often do successfully use marijuana that parts of the plant that might not be so potent, like the leaves, or they can successfully use lower THC marijuana, and it does relieve the intraocular pressure, which is why they're using it. Other people who suffer from pain may need very high THC marijuana to the point where if many patients smoked it, they wouldn't be able to function at all. They'd just go back to sleep, and they can't use that sort of thing. And then there's many people with varying illnesses like seizures who find that they need to, to consume it very regularly. So perhaps they, eat a piece of a cookie every 2 hours. And the point is that one kind of marijuana provided by one source, such as a state garden, would not work for most patients. And I think that that's really a problem that we would all have with something like that. Last session, I had the privilege of co-authoring with Madeline Martinez and several other people proposed legislative language that eventually became Senate Bill 767, which unfortunately never came to a vote. It proposed that we create a state garden, that the state grow cannabis and distribute it to patients who were registered in the program, and as an adjunct to their ability to cultivate their own cannabis or have it grown for them by a grower, not as a substitute. At that time, we were told, this was just last session, that that was not possible because, it would put state employees at risk with the federal government, et cetera, due to those concerns. So I find it remarkable that it's reappeared now, and it seems to be, those problems seem to have been resolved. That's excellent. However, again, we would speak against losing the right to control the kind of medicine and the exact sorts of strains that we need grown for ourselves, because that could not be addressed in such a situation. The other thing I'd like to address is the employment proposals that have been put forward. I think it's very important that we have a win-win there. I think it's important that employers be protected from any kind of legal action or loss of business that might be caused by regulations which would not accommodate appreciate them having someone, you know, using marijuana. Obviously, nobody uses marijuana in the workplace, nor does anyone here, I'm sure, wish that we could be able to use medical marijuana in the workplace. That's not appropriate. That should be done outside the workplace, and I don't think anyone's advocating that. However, I do have concerns that we not lose our rights as law-abiding citizens to work and to engage in employment and be treated like other people. That's all we're looking for. And I think that that's just the key here. I think there's no reason to discard patients' rights in order to protect employers' rights. I think we're all here to find the win-win situation. I would certainly support having a state garden and things like that, as I said, as long as we're not losing our essential rights to privacy and to make the necessary choices for ourselves. Surely you wouldn't want to have only one pharmacy you could buy your medicine at. They could charge you outrageous prices. You know, how could you afford it? Many of us could not afford the fee that's been proposed for the state garden right now. We can barely afford to, you know, pay the electric bill, et cetera, to grow our own medicine. So I just think that those are things I'd like for you to keep in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. And forgive me. I'm going to have to ask people to keep it to 2 minutes. I mean, that's hard to do, but I have, you know, I have 30-some people signed up already, and we just try. I'm not going to be a hardliner on this, but let's try and be concise and to the point, and try not to repeat what others have said, and thank you for your
I apologize. Be the first.
It's okay. It's not. And by the way, I believe we can set up a situation where we would be able to provide for specific individual needs, but that will, and I would invite your expertise in that process, creating that.
Our proposal provided for an oversight committee that would participate in choosing the strains to be grown, et cetera. So perhaps something like that might be something you'd like to consider if you move forward with this proposal.
Okay. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, I know 2 minutes is not a lot of time, but do your best. And I'm not going to gavel you down right at 2 minutes when the buzzer goes off, but let's try and keep it tight. Thank you, sir.
Go well, ahead. A good wind-up gong would work. good morning. I'm Laird Funk. I'm from Williams, Oregon, and I'm here to address specifically 2881 and 3274. I hope you've been provided this. This is the bulk of my testimony regarding 3274. I do have two additional comments. The DEA has clearly, well, not so clearly, depending on which news release you hear from California, decided not to arrest people who grow for dispensaries and bust dispensaries. But I found no information at all that they changed their position towards pharmacies registered by them to dispense controlled substances, dispensing a Schedule I non-medically useful, by their definition, controlled substance. In 1992, I wrote an initiative which was circulated briefly towards the end of the initiative period for that biennium, which called specifically for the state of Oregon to obtain marijuana from this federal government, who said they're the only person who can give it away, and then dispense that through the pharmacies in Oregon. I got a letter from the DEA saying that should any pharmacy participate in dispensing a Schedule I controlled substance, they would lose their license to dispense any controlled substance. Now, I suggest that that's a different situation than saying we're not going to bust dispensaries in California. This is a nationwide rule, and as far as I can tell, it's uniformly applied. Another issue is the cost. I personally, right now, provide cannabis medicine for 4 patients. Each of them live on $900 a month, federal disability payment. That's their sole income. Each of them uses 1 ounce per week and have for 4 or 5 years running. It is not possible for those people to spend any money on providing themselves medicine. The only reason I'm providing it for them is because they couldn't even afford to set themselves up to grow their medicine. And I was in a position where I could do so for them without a great deal of extra effort for myself. So charging anybody on disability anything for the medicine they use that amount of is going to wreak havoc in their budget, and it's just not going to work out as a way to distribute this equitably around the state. And I personally do believe that should you at this point say, all right, you cannot grow it for yourself, you're going to find that you immediately have several thousand criminals in the state of Oregon who still wish to grow the type that works for them. Okay, House Bill 2881. We don't have any evidence that we have a workplace problem with medical marijuana using patients. We just don't see it. There's no evidence. We see every year that the workplace accident rates declined since the bill was passed in 98. I'm not saying that's because of the bill. It just doesn't mesh, though, to show we have a problem. But if this institution is going to pass any bills on workplace, I suggest 2881 is the one to do it. It does conform with Oregon's desire to say marijuana is medicine and should be treated like other medicines. Thank you so much, sir. Other questions?
My pleasure, and that's my intention as amended. Go ahead, sir.
My name is John Sagio. I'm the Director of Voter Power, and I'm the Campaign Manager for Initiative 28. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. As far as the workplace bills, we do understand the employer's interest in having a safe workforce. I guess my interest would just be that in that area, marijuana was treated like other drugs, and I don't really see that in any of the bills. It seems like special provisions are being created for marijuana rather than laws being set up that limit impairment for any reason in the workplace and treat marijuana like you might treat morphine or OxyContin. And we have no problem if marijuana is treated like other things that can make you unsafe in the workplace. What we can't support is if marijuana is singled out for special treatment. I think the more important bill today is 3274, and I would thank Representative Maurer for putting this issue on the table, and I think forming a work group is an excellent idea. We do have an initiative out that's an alternative regulated medical marijuana system. We're petitioning to put it on the 2010 ballot. We've done polling, and polling on the ballot title shows that 59% of voters support our initiative as drafted, so I would encourage you to take a look at it as an alternative. There's some significant differences between it and 3274 that I'll run through. First, I think I think 3274 suffers from three fatal flaws. First, it envisions distributing marijuana through pharmacies, and as others have pointed out, that just won't happen as long as marijuana is prohibited by federal law. I've talked to pharmacists about that, and it's just not a workable model. The second problem is we don't support a state garden. We don't think the government should be in the business of business. We think the government should regulate private enterprise, and we think that approach can work very effectively and create a very tightly controlled system, but we think it should be private companies producing the marijuana that are tightly regulated by the federal government. I would point you to, there's three examples so far in the world of state-produced medical marijuana. One is the U.S. federal government produces medical marijuana that's used in all the research in the United States. It's also provided to a small number of remaining patients through the Investigational New Drug Program. One of those patients is Elvin Musica, who I believe is here today to also testify, but I also am her grower under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, and she needs me to be a grower for her and move to Oregon because the marijuana provided by the federal government is of such low quality that, you know, it's her belief that if she had to rely exclusively on it, she might have gone blind. Another example is the Canadian government set up a monopoly state marijuana production facility, and they contracted out to a company that produced medical marijuana in an abandoned mine in northern Canada, and it turned out that the marijuana they produced was contaminated with toxic heavy metals since it was produced in an abandoned mine, and you know, very few Canadian patients are willing to use this marijuana produced by the Canadian government, so it's been a huge expensive boondoggle. In the Netherlands, they similarly contracted out to produce marijuana for the government that's available for through pharmacies there. And similarly there, patients prefer to go buy their marijuana at the coffee shops where anybody in the Netherlands, any adult, can buy marijuana. So we have three examples of state monopolies, and they've all failed miserably, and I don't think it's because of marijuana. I think it's because, you know, economics tell us that monopolies don't work, and government monopolies in particular don't work. So I'd ask you to look at a system that regulates private individuals doing it, not the state. The third fatal flaw, I think, is recriminalizing patients. We've had this medical marijuana law for 10 years, and we all recognize the problems. I won't belabor that point, but I would just say that recriminalizing thousands of patients would be a disaster. It would cost the state of Oregon probably hundreds of millions of dollars in enforcement. You have to understand that these patients are now required to have a garden. You can't even get a medical marijuana card if you don't have a garden. Most patients invest thousands of dollars in their garden, so collectively these 20-some thousand patients have invested tens of millions of dollars in their equipment. It would be a cruel act to negate all that and make them felons, particularly if they choose to continue producing their own medicine that they think is better, cheaper, or more convenient than what they can get from the state.
And you're going to have to understand that we got to move on.
Okay. Well, that concludes my remarks.
I appreciate what you said.
Chair,
and I definitely want some folks from the medical marijuana community, for want of a better word, I guess, to definitely be involved in this work group, because I'm not an expert at it. I don't claim to be. And working through these issues, I just want a controlled environment, just like Vicodin, just like that. We can do this. I'm confident we can, without being cruel.
Okay,
I'm going to have to limit questions, members, so let's just be very short and concise. And
I have a brief question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said many of the patients have invested thousands of dollars in their garden. Very briefly, I'd need to understand that.
Well, particularly for patients that are growing indoors, the equipment that you use is very expensive. I mean, one light can cost $500. Some patients use several lights. If you're growing hydroponically, you have pumps, filters, ventilation equipment, extra security on your basement door. I could go on and on.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Matthews.
Mr. Chair, just a real quick comment for everybody testifying today, and I guess for the committee. I'm just curious, at some point, we're hearing, extreme numbers of patients, but also, let's not forget there's an abuse of the system now, and I doubt that there's any of those folks abusing it that are here today to testify. But there is a bigger problem here, too, and that is the abuse of the medical marijuana card holders program. And I'm just curious if anybody wants to identify that at some point in the testimony today, because we understand the need and we understand legitimacy, but I'm just curious if we're going to get there at some point. But that's my only comment. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you very much.
I really appreciate coming, and I'm sorry I have to be so hard on the time, but we have a lot of people we want to get up here today.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Well,
if I may, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank you. One witness got to go 3 minutes, another witness got to go 5 minutes.
I know.
I appreciate
I
want to just point out you're being very tolerant.
Thank you. And Cynthia Willis, thank you, Representative. You're more than 100 miles away, so come on up. And if it's already been said, folks, don't say it again. At least say it again within the 2 minutes. Because if I find you're repeating what's already been said, I will have to shut you off and ask you to take your seat. Ms. Willis, please, welcome to the Capitol. Thanks for coming so far.
Oh, you're welcome. I got up at 2 this morning to join you today. I'm glad that Representative Matthews brought up abuses, because as someone who is involved in the medical...
Oh, ma'am, for the record, you have to identify yourself.
My name is Cynthia Willis with Medical Marijuana Patient Services in Medford, Oregon. I personally, in the last 5 or 6 years, have helped license 4,000 or 5,000 patients in this state with 2 different foundations. I deal specifically with patient issues, and I agree that there probably is a very small amount of people that are abusing the system. And I would really like to be in a position where you and I could speak about specifics, because I do know approximately a quarter of the patients in this state. But this is a public venue, and there are confidentiality issues involved. What I would like to say is I'm a patient, caregiver, and provider. My provider provides for me for free. The medicine, the federal program, as originally been stated by Mr. Sajo, was considered very good in the beginning. It's now considered garbage, not even fit for edibles. And how the state is going to guarantee the quality of my medicine, I don't know. I myself take approximately 4.5 pounds a year. I've been a patient for about 6 years. I know that cancer patients require approximately 9 pounds of very high quality bud and that does not include the 3 pounds of materials a year that they need for bakeables. So I would like to know where the state proposes that they are going to be able to take care of me or any other patient in this state until your first crop comes in. You're looking at over 6 months. First you have to find seeds or clones. Where are you going to get those? You know, these are all problems that everybody faces. Not to, you know, if you're growing year-round, you're going to have expenses of about $325 a light, plus your panda plastic, plus your ventilation, your soil amendments, your growing medium. The list goes on and on and on. So, meanwhile, I think that you should really look at supporting the initiative that Voter Power has, or at least incorporating it, and also, as a longtime patient who will never be off the program until it's declared that I'm a criminal, I would like to see a long-term card like a driver's license. You know, give me an 8-year card. I'll pay $500. The state already appropriated, $902,000 of our registration fees and then wanted to raise our fees. So let's be fair to the patients, and thank you for your time.
And I just want to, before you go, thank you for coming so far, and ask the members if they have any questions of you, Ms. Willis.
Nope. Well, what I would like to see is maybe...
No, ma'am, I asked
if
them
I questions,
if they wanted to ask you any questions.
Yes, please.
And it doesn't look like it.
That's fine.
And you know where to find Representative Matthews. I hope to have that conversation. I think that's a conversation we're all going to have again.
Well, and I think the state police should be involved in these
right.
conversations
that's
also
great.
So there's clear understanding.
I think that's
because
a great
there's
idea.
A lot of abuses... by a small amount of law enforcement, and it's because they don't understand. It's not because they're trying to be bad to the patient. They just don't understand.
And that's what we're trying to do here, is shed some light on something that many don't know anything about.
Yeah,
including
well, thank you so much.
No, my pleasure, and thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming today. Okay, I'm going to ask Gary Conkling and Grant Higginson to come on up, please. And Gary, you want to just go first and walk through 2881 and the amendment, and then Grant, if you have anything to say or want to answer any questions, go ahead, Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Folks, in case you're timing this, Gary's helped me and some other legislators draft some language, so I'm going to give him a little more time so he can explain what's going on, so you all hear what we're trying to do here. So if you're timing, that's why he's going to get more than 2 minutes. And Mr. Higgins is from the Department of Human Services, and we may spend a little more time with these two guys, just so you know. Thank you. Gary, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Gary Conkling, representing the Associated General Contractors. And just a brief amount of history so you know how I arrived at this particular seat today. AGC has worked on the medical marijuana and the workplace issue for the last 3 sessions. We've supported measures that have failed to pass, including most recently in the February supplemental session. We have, as a result of that, and our continuing interest in finding a solution, had a number of, we've done a lot of research in the interim. We've had discussions with drug testing experts, and we've had a collaboration with a number of legislators, including Representative Buckley. And that collaboration in our thinking was somewhat behind House Bill 2881. If I could, I think it's helpful to understand what maybe drives us to worry about this issue. First off, we believe that employers, particularly those of us who are either federal or state contractors who have legal requirements to maintain a drug-free workplace, are caught in the crosshairs of conflicting federal and state laws. We have obligations to test for a variety of drugs, to take actions to discipline employees who test positive, and yet at the same time we're also subject to Oregon laws that can bring us forward in contested cases for discriminating against employees that we may discipline. We also are sensitive that employers, especially ones with safety-sensitive occupations, need to make sure that we maintain a safe workplace. The public counts on it. For those of us in the construction industry, it's not just that we don't have workers who are injured, but that we manufacture roads and buildings that are safe for public use. We also, as we walk through this process, believe that a solution needs to be fair both to the employers as well as to our employees. We're not interested in invading their privacy, nor are we interested in limiting their access to appropriate care. Finally, we're interested very much in a solution that cannot just pass one house, but that can pass both houses and be signed by the governor into law. We've worked on this too long to not have a solution. We ought to be able to figure this one out. So House Bill 2881 is, in our view, a bill that provides a drug testing procedure for medical marijuana that parallels existing procedures that are used for other prescription painkillers. It involves essentially when a drug test occurs, and by the way, this is only triggered when there's drug testing. None of this occurs if there's not a drug test. So this mechanism we're talking about here only applies in those circumstances where a drug test is administered.
And Gary, I want to just interject there. And no employee would be in any way, shape, or form forced to volunteer any information on whether they have a medical marijuana recommendation or not.
Mr. Chairman, correct? That's correct. House Bill 2881 does not impose that requirement on an employee.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
When an employee a prospective employee takes a drug test, tests positive for marijuana, and displays a Oregon medical marijuana card, the procedure would be triggered that would send that test prior to going to the employer to a medical review officer. Many of us who have drug testing programs already have this process in place. There are federally certified medical review officers. My understanding in Oregon there are roughly 50 or so of them. I could be off on the number, but that's at least the information I have, that work either for or in collaboration with drug testing companies. They're already in place. They're already people that provide this service for prescription painkillers. And the service they provide is essentially to review the facts and circumstances of a particular patient's use of, in this case, medical marijuana, which would involve talking with that patient and with presumably their prescribing, their medical prescriber. The area where House Bill 2881, in our view, needs to be strengthened is to make sure that on the front end, that the prescription side, or actually the recommendation side, as I should speak more accurately, that leads to issuance of a card, actually follows accepted standards for medical physicians. And toward that purpose, the California Attorney General, Edmund G. Brown, issued a longer opinion dealing with medical marijuana issues of several kinds. This is an opinion issued in August 2008, cited in his opinion, essentially some of those key characteristics that would, I think, broadly be defined as an appropriate patient-doctor relationship. And they include taking a history, conducting a good faith examination of the patient, developing a treatment plan with objectives, providing informed consent, including discussion of side effects, periodically reviewing the treatment's efficacy, consultations as necessary, and keeping proper records supporting the decision to recommend the use of medical marijuana. It has been our suggestion that an amendment be added to House Bill 2881 that reiterates these basic criteria for physicians or other prescribers, and that if necessary, any other clarifications be provided to make sure, for example, that we're not requiring anybody to disclose that they have a medical marijuana card. And that such a bill, in our view, would pass the test that I mentioned earlier, of being a solution that helps employers, that's fair, and provides due process to employees. And it would seem, at least, has a good chance of passing both the both the House, the Senate, and being signed by the governor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Doctor, you want to shed some light on this?
Certainly. Chair Schaffer and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson. I'm the administrator of the Office of Community Health and Health Planning, Public Health Division, Oregon Department of Human Services, and my office is responsible for the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, as well as a number of other programs. And I'm here today just to testify on House Bill 3274, which, as you've heard, would create a state-run medical marijuana production system, would disallow private grow sites, and would also create a distribution system through pharmacies. As you can see in the bill, these changes would add substantial new responsibilities to the department. And I need to be clear here that the department is neutral right now on the bill. We're neutral on the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act in general. We just administer the medical marijuana program. But I do have to say that we do not believe that the fit of these new responsibilities is a good one for the department. We'll talk about that a little bit later. When I look at the session this year and see the number of bills that are up, substantive bills that are up addressing medical marijuana, it does make me think that even though the law has been around for 10 years, there are still substantial issues that need to be addressed to make the program work well. A major complaint that I hear from the advocates and the patient side of things is that, you know, there just simply isn't enough medical marijuana out there without having to go through the black market or doing other illegal activities. And then on the law enforcement side, what I hear is the provision to allow private grows across the state of Oregon really does lead to the potential for abuses. And what I do appreciate about House Bill 3274 is that it is a real attempt to try to get rid of both of those issues. I was very happy to hear the chair today and Representative Maller talk about the relationship with the federal government. In the past, state-run medical marijuana grow and distribution systems have been discussed before. We have always opposed those bills. The department has always opposed those bills in the past because there was simply no way the Bush administration was going to allow that. There would have been severe...
Well, I'm glad to see he's gone.
I'm not going to comment on that. Severe sanctions, I think, against the state, and it would have put state employees at risk. And so I'm very happy to hear both the chair and Representative Mowers recognize the importance of working with the federal government. We would have to get clear indication from them and probably even some concessions from them on how we deal with medical marijuana if this was actually going to work in the state. Another policy issue I wanted to bring up is that the way we try to run the medical marijuana program is to consider medical marijuana like another medicine. And again, I think the whole idea of a distribution system that goes through pharmacies tries to make medical marijuana much more like other legal drugs. I'm not sure if you've gotten a fiscal impact yet on this. There will be a substantial fiscal impact, a multi-million dollar fiscal impact. As you've heard from some of the advocates, the revenue potential for revenue generating to the state should at least be able to cover the cost of the program. So it should not have a negative impact on the budget. And back to the department's position on where this program belongs, when you look at some of the new responsibilities, it's for operating a medical marijuana production facility, ensuring the security of facilities and plants, distributing medical marijuana to pharmacies, ensuring consistent quality of medicine, and ensuring compliance with FDA regulations. Those responsibilities really are not in our areas of expertise. So if the bill is going to move forward, we would appreciate the discussion about where is the best organizational placement for such a program. We also have identified a number of administrative issues that I would like to go through as well. One of them is that the department does question a single production facility, and you've already heard.
You know what, Doctor? I tell you what, I'm going to cut in here.
Okay.
Because I don't think DHS is going to do this, one, in case Dr. Goldberg's watching. Two, we got a lot of work to do before we establish this. So I really don't want to take up a bunch of time going down the do's or don'ts of this right now. I know you've got a lot of work to do. Forgive me. Please forgive me if I'm interrupting. I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on that today, is what I'm trying to say. Is that fair?
Chair Schlosser, that is very fair.
Yeah.
And in fact, the last statement I was going to make
I did
have a number of administrative issues that need to be addressed. But what I, again, was happy to hear both you and Representative Maurer say is you see having a work
group
come
that's
together.
Exactly.
That's what I believe needs to happen, and we would be happy to
That's
participate.
Correct. And I'm going to start off with a question that actually my good friend Representative Cameron, I hope he's still my friend after my last political crack. which I'm guilty of doing in this place. Probably should tone it down a little bit.
As I always say to my fellow ducks, there are good people in bad places.
Okay. My friend came up with a question about, and this is Gary, existing medical marijuana cards, and what are we going to do there? And my response was, just off the top of my head, first of all, if you have... are in position of a medical marijuana recommendation card, and if there is no test, and clearly it's not going to trigger anything, and you will not be in any way, shape, or form mandated to volunteer that information. I believe in that. I think that's the way it should stay, and I think that's good. But on the other hand, if you have a card, it's already gotten it before something like this takes effect. You would, and then you did have a random or some kind of blood or urine test as a result of employment, then that would trigger the medical review officer process in the bill as written. And if you could establish, if you could prove that you'd already had established in place a physician-patient relationship that fits the criteria in the amended version, then you'd be squared away. Or we need to put something in here that would state clearly that you, the patient, do have to go out now after that trigger event and establish a physician-patient relationship that fits the criteria in the amended version of the bill. And I don't know how we're going to put that in language, but I just would like you to respond to that question.
Mr. Chairman, it's a very good question. Conceptually, the way the House Bill 2881 and the amendment would work would be, this would be my understanding of how they conceptually would work. The medical review officer provisions in 2881 really only apply when someone is in a drug testing environment, either as a prospective employee or in a random drug test as an employee. So that particular provision only is triggered in that set of circumstances. The broader provisions that we're suggesting be added are ones that are really broad medical guidelines for recommending or prescribing medications. They, as expressed in the Attorney General's opinion, really relate to the discipline of physicians. So I think conceptually what it means is that it really is a signal to the medical community relative to issuance of cards. It shouldn't have a direct impact on any specific medical marijuana card holder.
Okay. That would exist today before this bill if it takes effect. All right. Well, good. I hope that's the case. Any questions of these gentlemen? And there's a lot going on here, folks. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
And thanks for understanding, Doctor. I appreciate it. I'm going to call... I don't have any idea. Does that...
We're looking into it. Okay. Other media come in.
And just in case, shut off your phones, your Blackberries, your gadgets, so we don't hear a buzzing sound, too. I'm going to call now... that is really unpleasant. I hope they can fix that thing.
Madeline Martinez, Linda Barrett, and Linda Spencer. Do we need to move a chair here?
I think we're
good. Oh, that's a nice lady.
Yes.
Thank you. And whoever wants to start right off, go right ahead. Please.
I will.
Then I'm going to go with.
Thank you. My name is Linda Spencer. Thank you, Chair Schaffler, and members of the committee for letting me speak. I have a neurological disorder, which is important to understand about this is that I need specific strains of cannabis to alleviate the symptoms of this disorder. The sativa types of cannabis tends to speed or tense up my neurological system in my back and my spine. The indica types of medicine calms my nervous system and allows me to relax and sleep when I need to. My grower knows the difference between the various strains, whereas it would be difficult to trust another state-sanctioned grower to keep the two different types separated. The grower and I have complete control over the strains, the harvesting timing techniques, and other factors, which would make a great difference in whether the medicine works for or against my condition. The money to grow has been invested, and I live on a very small fixed income. Having to buy medicine would be a real problem during these tough economic times. Also, I'm tired of being discriminated against by the pain management specialist because the FED and the DEA have them scared to treat me because there's medical marijuana in my system. So I have to treat myself with my indica marijuana. And please don't take my grow sites away from me, my personal grow sites. And we are told via the media that growing at home causes people to have break-ins and burglaries. I submit that most of these problems have been because of people who tell others what they do not need to know. My neighbors have no inkling as to what might be growing on my site. Were I a thief, I would much rather break into a house which has fully processed cannabis or whatever type of prescription medication that I would be after. People rob houses for prescription painkillers, and yet it doesn't seem to matter whether the meds came from a pharmacy or if they were produced by the state. Our mission as growers is to wipe out the black market, whether these illegal sales are from private or state growers. We will probably find that the statistics show that there are relatively few break-ins at legal grow sites. The state of Oregon will certainly be able to draw plenty of revenue from the dispensaries as well as in other ways. Please allow those of us with limited financial resources to continue to quietly grow our medicine and control the quality of the same. Thank you.
You know, Linda, well done. You are, that was great testimony in timely fashion. Go ahead.
Go ahead, ladies.
It's hard to know. My name, good morning, and I can't pronounce your name, but and I'm glad to be here. My name is Linda Barrett. My husband is my grower, so therefore I know that he doesn't use chemicals and grows only natural medicine. I have an eating disorder called cachexia. It is a wasting syndrome of the body. It enables it. I eat medicables, bite-sized medicated muffins to help with my appetite. Oils, salves, and tinctures help with the severe pain from the health problems, other health problems. I pray that he will be able to continue growing for me so that I can get the relief I need from the strains of natural meds that are so, that are much effective for me. And I got any more time?
Go right ahead. You sure?
Okay. Well, 3 years ago, when I was blessed to find out that I could get me a marijuana card, I was on 11 different kinds of prescriptions. And one of those was morphine sulfate 3 times a day, 30 milligrams a day. Now, how can anybody work on that? You can't. Okay. Since then, I have no insurance, so I have no medications, right? I am blessed to have a doctor that works with me and knows me and has gotten me to where I'm not on all that other medication because I don't choose it. It's really toxic to my body, worse than the problems I already have. And she signed for me this year, and I was so blessed. And I am so glad for this program. And I really would like my husband to continue growing. You know, we go by the rules, and he's been doing it for a long time now for me. He's been to a horticulture since he was a kid. You know, they had gardens and stuff, so he's very good at what he does. And please don't make him quit it for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler, Chair Schaffler, and committee members. I thank you so much for listening to our pleas to please be compassionate with our program. There are many of us that are suffering from pain, and we live with it every day. We'd like to live with dignity. You know, we have a death with dignity plan, and could we have a life with dignity program?
Madeline, you need to...
Madeline Martinez. I'm the executive director of Oregon Normal and a patient and advocate. And I'm really concerned with some of the problems that seem to be brought up every legislative session. We go through this dance with law enforcement and some of the big business lobby that choose to want to hurt us, you know, in the workplace. And all of us need our jobs right now. We're in an economic crisis. Every single one of these bills or legislative language takes time and money to bring up every session. And all we're asking is, to be treated with dignity and respect. Allow us to use the medicine that works safest for us. Many of us live with chronic pain, and it takes a toll when you have to take pharmaceuticals. They destroy your vital organs. And the choice for me is the safest and the best quality of life that medical marijuana affords me. I represent over 1,200 members and 23,000 patients. Medical marijuana works, and what we need is to study it. We need to study it, and Oregon needs to lead the way by showing that we can have a state garden to supplement those patients who are not able to grow their own. That would stop a lot of the abuse. The people that have been taken advantage of are being taken advantage of because we have no access, and that's the problem. And you know, I'm really happy to see all of you being concerned with the accessibility. I think it's admirable, and I really respect all of you for your hard work. But that said, it's a crime not to have access to a medicine to tell people, here's a program, you can have it. Where do you get it? Your guess is as good as mine. And to have to go to the black market, the seedy black market, is really dangerous for patients in chairs. So please help us gain access, but don't take my right away to grow. If I grew organic vegetables, can you just tell me, no, you can't grow that. You've got to go to the market and buy the chemically, you know, treated, you know, vegetables, chickens, the same thing. I don't want what somebody else grows. I want what I grow. Oregon Normal has established a program for 8 years. We have the Oregon Medical Cannabis Awards. A lot of people are offended by it. No one's doing the study. We have to gather the data on our own. And we go out there and we find out which of the strains works most effectively for which conditions. And I think that to throw it all down the toilet, 10 years, I'm not a criminal. I go to Kaiser. I'm just saying, give us a chance. Treat us right. We respect you. Respect us, please. We're criminals. We're not criminals, rather, we're patients. And there are some people that are abusing the law, but we can handle that. People rob banks every day. We're not going to shut the banks down.
And Madeline, I don't, and I've been here for four sessions now. And by the way, that was a big business lobbyist that's helped write this bill.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I don't think the people that are in this room are a threat to themselves, a threat to the state, or a threat to the safety of the workplace. I don't think anyone up here wants to deny anyone access to what they have. And I don't think this bill does that. 2881. I'm not finished yet. Obviously, the state garden issue. We're going to talk about that. We're going to work something out, I think, maybe. But there's a lot to learn, and we're going to go through a learning process to do that. And this is just a general statement. Folks, I just want to repeat, you don't have to repeat the things you've already heard. It's important. We're not going to work that bill till we get federal okay, and then we're going to sit down in a calm, deliberative manner with you good folks and try and work something out that fits. So I just want to share that. But I don't consider you nice ladies a threat to the state or the safety, health, and welfare of the world my little girl lives in. And I don't think anybody in this room represents that. So,
thank you.
Okay, now I have to open it to questions, and then we're going to go. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madeline, when you were testifying, I thought I heard you say Oregon can lead the way, and you would be supportive of a state garden if it were done in the right way.
If it didn't restrict,
I just want clarification because
I would support it if it didn't restrict patients leading elite patients' ability to grow their own medicine. That's all I'm asking.
Okay.
Is for patients to be allowed to continue to grow their own medicine. As they said, I spend a lot of money on my growing equipment, okay. And I grow for four patients who aren't able to grow their own. And I just think that would be a fair, and you have to say on 2881, there really are no statistics to show that there are safety violations anywhere. Safety's gone down. But the other thing I want to bring up is there's a program through DHS that's called the Preferred Employee Program. And employers are actually subsidized to employ people who are on morphine and more dangerous drugs. And to me, that's not a safe workplace or a drug-free workplace. So let's be careful what we're asking for here. I think it might be HIPAA. I'm not sure.
Well, that's we'll let the lawyers figure that one out. Representative Thatcher.
Couldn't help. I was looking at this handout that we got from New Mexico. Well, I don't know if it's from New Mexico, but it's the New Mexico Register. And I'm not sure who brought it up, but I was kind of scanning through it, and I'm wondering if you've looked at laws or rules in other states applying to medical marijuana, and if you found any that are agreeable.
Yes, actually there are some that are very agreeable, as I believe New Mexico is. You can have someone very similar to what Mr. Sage just spoke about, where the nonprofits will grow and they can grow up to 96 plants. I think that's fair. That's what I have to have in my garden. And I think all we need is oversight for quality control, because that's a big problem. I don't want patients to have to use medicine that's contaminated with mold, and that could really end someone's life really quickly in the fragile conditions that many of us are in.
And just for a note, looks like, I'm just scanning through this, it looks like they're licensed, and it is over.
Exactly.
It's seen over. It's kind of an interesting document, actually.
That's what we do here is consider ideas. Mm-hmm. And when you come up with an idea, it never fails. There's a million more ideas come along with it.
I'd like to be part of the work group.
We're going to make sure include some nice people, and I'm confident you'll be on the list. But I can't put everyone on the list.
Thank you.
Oh, just want to let you know that. It'll be a reduced number of folks. I just don't want people to think we're going to have a room like this, because you can't get anything done like that. Any further questions of these nice folks? All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All righty then. I'm going to call you. Go out there and move those chairs, please. I'm going to accommodate some nice people here today, because I don't want folks to have to stay if it's not helpful for them. I would like Stormy Ray and Stephen Hicks, please, to come on up and testify. Let's get that stuff out of the way for you, and then we'll... And then after these nice folks, I'm just going to start going right... Oh, forgive me, I'm going to call one more panel, and then we're just going to go right down the list. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Hicks, and I've been a medical marijuana card holder for 8-plus years. I have a severe spinal cord injury, and I need my medicine to be attainable and affordable. My biggest concern is that for the last 8 years, my medicine has been very cost-effective. My effort and experience over the years has allowed me to grow the medicine I need without adding any further medical bills to the $400-plus a month it costs me just to be insured. Due to the fact that marijuana is still Class 1 drug by the federal definition, I highly doubt that my insurance carrier, Blue Cross of Alabama, would let me fill a prescription at my local pharmacy. While I am very fortunate to have an affordable insurance, I know many cardholders that do not have the same luxury. Therefore, the only people that will be able to afford their medicine will be the wealthy, and that can pay it out of pocket. Most people that I know in Oregon that have worked, or excuse me, most people that I know that have Oregon medical marijuana cards are disabled and unable to work. What you're proposing is discrimination against people who cannot afford to pay for their medicine. Only the well-off card holders could possibly afford to pay the $98 an ounce plus tax plus what insurance won't pay, which is likely to be nothing. Thank you for hearing my biggest concern. Please don't take our right to grow our own medicine.
Thank you. That's good. Stormy, you want to go ahead? Drake, go ahead.
Do I need to hand this to somebody?
Okay. Thank you for hearing me. Before you, I have I'm going to call it a friendly amendment. It's against...
And Ms. Ray, you need to identify yourself.
I'm so sorry.
We're going to move that up closer to you for you, too.
Thank you.
Who is
Stephen get back in his place, and then we'll you can start all over again so we get everything you have to say.
Okay. Does that sound
good? Yeah, that's much better. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Stormy Ray. I was a chief co-petitioner for the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act 10 years ago, and I have seen a lot of development over those 10 years. We have a lot of people doing the best they can to make a better quality of life for their loved ones here in Oregon. Many of these people have, in fact, invested a lot of money, and they're very concerned about not being able to continue the growing of their medicine. What I have brought before the panel today is an alternative to having the pharmacies having to control our medicine. I'd like to see a possibility of leaving it in the hands of the patients that need it. I know that we're talking about a very big revenue for the state, and I'm hoping that they take a really close look at the proposal that I have. If you can all look at this particular diagram that's in your panel, I believe it's the second sheet. It illustrates how patients keeping their caregiver and their growth site could actually decide whether or not to sell their excess medication to a co-op that is being ran by patients for patients. Basically, the patients will have a safe, regulated co-op to get the medical marijuana information and their garden stock for next time. And that's a really big concern. There will be patients that choose to keep their gardens because of a specific stock, but for many patients, being able to go to a co-op and know that we have a safe medical supply of medicine available is just godsend. And after 10 years, this particular proposal, in conjunction with Senate Bill 388 that's on its way over here, I hope, very soon, gives back the patients the right to have this program. This is what I believe the voters intended in the beginning. And to discriminate at this point is just not the right thing to do. We have had some wonderful, wonderful recovery stories. A lot of the patients that were yesterday, they're not patients today. They've re-entered the workforce. They have become productive citizens of Oregon again. And we'd like to keep just as many of them out there as we can. But if something were to happen and they become disabled, we want this wonderful medicine available through the hands that know how to make it available, through the hands that have had to utilize it in moments that were not so difficult to steer through. We're 10 years old, so we're proposing that patients now will have a way to get a reimbursement for this excess medicine that they don't give away to another cardholder at $50 an ounce, which would lower their own garden costs in itself. And it's expensive to raise our medicine. Patients and their caregivers could volunteer at a co-op. They already know most of how this medicine has to be grown and harvested. So their expertise come harvest time would be invaluable to these co-ops that are producing our medication. And that would literally reduce the cost of the patient's medication. But what about the patient that doesn't join the co-op? How are they going to reduce their costs? Well, if a patient decides to keep his grow site and the caregiver, he can take and reduce his costs by sending back his good quality medicine into a co-op to make it available for other patients, reducing the cost of his garden to grow the medicine. I hope that you will take a really serious look at this. My wrap-up is it gives us back responsibility, revenue, and oversight. because it would be the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program that would be in control of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act supply system. Thank you for your time.
No, thank you, Ms. Ray, and I just want to thank you for, 10 years ago, passing this could not have been easy. And you're bucking up against decades, if not centuries, of opposition. And I just want to commend you for your courage and your effort and your willingness to get out front of something that a lot of people just wouldn't have had the courage to do. So I just want to thank you for that. And with that, I will open up any questions to Ms. Wright. And I hope you will join us in our deliberations on anything, plan, program that we do in the future, because clearly you've been there.
I would also like to volunteer for your panel.
Yeah, that's what I'm extending to you right now. Thank you very much. I appreciate you. And folks, we're doing really well here. If we just keep moving on. One more person is from 100 miles or more away. Christina, why don't you come on up here? Christina McGavin. I'm sorry, miss, are you more than 100 miles away too? Then come right on up. And then we're going to move on after that.
Thank you.
Whoever sits down first, identify yourself and go for it. Christina, you look like you're ready. You're Christina. You go ahead, miss.
I'm Jessica.
Hi, Jessica. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jessica Barber. I live at 327 Southeast 94th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. I am a medical marijuana patient. I do not work for anyone who makes money off of the clinics or anything like that. I am just a patient, and I'm here today to hopefully express some concerns and answer some questions that I hear you people have. First off, I'd like to address something that you said yourself, Chairman, and that is that most the overall amount of physicians who are writing prescriptions. Let me give you my story. When I went to my doctor with my recommendation of getting my medical marijuana card, as opposed to using the extremely heavy narcotics that I need to use for my pain, my doctor told me not only would they not touch that, but they were not even allowed to discuss it due to the clinic that they stay in. I've received this for many times, including my dying aunt who had lost a leg, an eye, an arm to diabetes and was bedridden, and her doctor told her to get that out of his office. He didn't even want to look at it when she brought out the form from OMMP. My doctor actually recommends I go to the THC Foundation and get my prescription filled there. I see this doctor once a year. He looks over my medical charts and whatnot and then prescribes me my medication. I cannot do this with my current insurance plan. So we're really forced to go to certain physicians, and I think only when you guys force our regular physicians to deal with us and be able to do this without fear of reprimandation, then we're going to be able to deal with this whole patients and physicians having a good back and forth. It's impossible for me to do that. In order to go to the THC Foundation, I have to pay $250. I don't work, neither does my husband, due to our disabilities and whatnot. Luckily, I am very blessed with having a father who owns his own business and has taken me in and helped me. Another thing that you mentioned is that parents don't grow at home, grow sites at home due to the dangers to the children. That's really BS. I mean, really, come on, people.
I didn't mention it.
Okay, I'm sorry. This panel mentioned it.
Thank you.
Sorry. Somebody up here on this panel mentioned that parents don't grow. I think another one of those gentlemen did earlier. And that's really BS. As a parent of two, I don't grow in my home because I am scared to death of child services. I'm just petrified that they're going to decide I'm a bad mother. And that's one of the major reasons I know that a lot of parents don't grow at home. Also, I've talked to a lot of police officers in my neighborhood and whatnot, and their main concern these days is not medical marijuana or anyone even smoking marijuana who's not a patient. It's meth. And they want to control on meth, not marijuana. And so this whole police officers being so concerned about the amount of marijuana, I know it's damaging children. What difference does a plant make, a child seeing a plant as opposed to a beer sign? It has no more effect than that. If anything, the beer signs are a lot more encouraging for the children to do alcohol.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
Okay, so that's pretty much all I'm going to say there. I think I hit some key points, and I thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming so far, too. I really do. We appreciate it. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Christine McGarvin. I am a cultural anthropologist, and I have a master's degree in social work. My areas of expertise include mental health, substance abuse and recovery, and also human resource management. I've taught classes at the university of Alaska.
Wait a second. You can stay for questions, possibly.
Sorry.
That is dismissed.
Go ahead, ma'am.
And some of the research I've done on drug policy has been for the state of Texas regarding one of their incarcerated offenders programs. I am recently appointed to the Advisory Committee on Medical Marijuana, and I am a patient, caregiver, and grower. I passed out my letter to everyone. I'm not going to read it to you, but what I'd like you to take away from this, from my being here, is that my primary concerns are for patient privacy. I am not fond of the idea of employers getting involved in private matters, and I am also very concerned about discrimination and the Americans with Disabilities Act being tread upon. As far as House Bill 2881, I think that the procedural details should be left to people who administer whatever laws are enacted by this body, but I don't believe this body should dictate procedure. And the other thing is, I don't support any of the bills except for 2503. I believe that it's a smart addition to existing law that helps protect both employers and employees, and it wouldn't cost anything to implement. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Any questions?
Representative Holby, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't really have a question for this panel, but something they brought up, I don't know if DHS could answer us at a later date about whether we have any information on how many doctors actually prescribed medical marijuana, because we have concerns, as I've heard from the committee, that one doctor does a lot of prescriptions. Well, if in fact we have a medical community that doesn't do it, you know, in large part, then it does sort of put a lot of pressure on certain doctors that do make that prescription. So I don't know if DHS has any information on that. It would be helpful to know.
And Representative, I couldn't. It's a great question, and I think the whole my intention here is to legitimize this substance and make sure that it's getting in the hands of the people that need it and deserve it, and not into those that don't, and do it and maintain privacy and help people treat whatever's ailing them. That's the whole thing. But it's a great question.
My doctor at OHSU Richmond actually would be very happily sign my medical marijuana card. The only thing is the clinic that she works for refuses to allow them to do that. So until we address the fact that the clinics are telling the doctors what they can and cannot prescribe, I think we have a major problem.
It's like I don't really care much for pharmacists or doctors that would refuse my wife or daughter. My daughter's only 15, but or any woman contraceptive, I would find that offensive. So with that editorial.
Not to mention, it's very embarrassing when you go into the doctor and they refuse something like that.
Yeah, I can't.
It's humiliating, too.
Keep fighting the good fight. And thank you for coming to part. Thank you for both your testimony.
Thank you.
All right, I'm gonna go to some nice guys from the industry part of this. Brian Krieg, Bob Russell, J.L. Wilson. And you guys are professionals. We are going to keep you at or under 2 minutes. So, and that's all there is to it. Bob, go right ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell, president of the Oregon Trucking Association. And my concern is very narrow here. Safety is the most important, number one priority to the Oregon Trucking Associations, particularly highway safety. Today, our truck drivers are governed by federal drug and alcohol testing regulations. We are subject to pre-employment, random, a reasonable suspicion, and post-accident testing. The MRO procedures are also prescribed in the federal regulations. We do have a return to duty process where someone can go through rehabilitation and they test negative and then they can go back to work. States are preempted in this particular area. The federal government writes the regulations, whether it's an interstate or intrastate truck driver. One of the things that happens when a state passes laws that are inconsistent with the federal regulations is they want to withhold money. In this particular case, it would be the Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program money. Currently, Oregon gets about $4.8 million of biennium under the MXAT program. $2.1 million of that goes to OSP to put extra troopers on the highway. And I'm going to stop there and just ask that you take into consideration truck drivers and the drug and alcohol testing requirements that are imposed by the federal government on us today with anything that you do.
Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler. For the record, my name is Brian Krieg. Today I'm here representing the Sheet Metal and Air Conditioning Contractors Association, Sheet Metal Workers Local 16, and the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association. Our organizations represent about 300 licensed construction contractors and 4,000 construction workers across the state of Oregon. As my written testimony will indicate in front of you, as the bills are written in front of us today, we are in support of House Bills 2497 and 3052, and it notes that we are opposed to 2503 and 2881. That said, we know that the chair is working to try to achieve a workable solution by using amendments to 2881, and that in combination with House Bill 3274, would be something that we think could be a workable solution. We commend you on trying to achieve that and leading us out of the wilderness of the current situation. Our employers have legal and safety concerns. This is true. The federal contracting versus state policy has already been mentioned by AGC. That's a very key issue and leaves us in limbo on. One of the things that's important to remember, though, it is not just the employer's rights that we're talking about here. It's the rights of our workers to work in a safe workplace. Construction is a hazardous workplace, and safety is based on a partnership between individuals' responsibilities and personal and collective responsibilities. Our drug-free programs and policies that we've had in place for the last several years, going almost back a decade, are working to reduce accidents in the workplace, and we want to keep our policies working. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing Associated Oregon Industries. For the record, we support House Bills 2497 and 3052 as introduced. We oppose House Bills 2503 and 2881 as introduced, albeit we have not considered amendments to 2881 yet. We are here in the position of supporting 2497 and 3052 because of a confluence of two major events, the first of which is that Boley has taken the position that employers can be required to modify their substance abuse policies to permit medical marijuana use. Essentially, Oregon employers are being forced to accommodate a federally illegal controlled substance. Employers are being forced to do so despite Oregon law that clearly gives employers the right to ensure that their employees follow federal law with regard to illegal use of drugs. The second major event, obviously, is the explosive growth in Oregon's medical marijuana program. The statistics are attached to my testimony. Nearly 21,000 cardholders in the state, 90% of whom obtain their cards under the auspices of General Payne. Interestingly, only 6 or 7% of the cardholders have cardholders for HIV, glaucoma, cancer, those things for which the ballot measure was originally sold. This brings to a head employer concerns in really three major areas, the first of which is employer liability and workplace safety. One of the MCOs that we work with says that they've got at least 8 medical marijuana cases, injuries in their system today. You'll hear testimony from employers with workplace incidences involving medical marijuana cardholders. Also, the rate of lost workday incidences, our progress in reducing those has stopped dead in its tracks. You could say maybe in conjunction with the proliferation of the program, but the correlation is striking. Medical marijuana program compromises the ability of federal contracts for Oregon employers. If you're an Oregon employer, you have to certify federally that you have a drug-free workplace. 2497 and 3052 would help ensure that. And finally, the general concern that we're being forced to accommodate something that is, in fact, federally illegal.
Well, we'll have to work that all out, won't we? Thank you. Any questions, gentlemen? All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And thank you for being so understanding.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Matthews.
JL, you know, maybe there might have been an oversight. There was a number of cardholders per county, and it says Baker and Benton, but I don't have a list of the other counties. Is there, perhaps maybe that was just a mistake made? Could I get that from you?
Thank you, Chair Schaffler. Representative Matthews, you see the URL there at the bottom of the page. The quickest way is just to put that into your browser, and the whole page will come up.
I'll take care of it. Thank you.
So we're Jerry Wade. Yeah. Jerry Wade, Paula Barron, and Dan Sabino. Sabatino.
May I start, Mr. Vice Chair? Members of the committee, my name is Paula Barron. I'm a private attorney, and I'm here with a group from Associated Oregon Industries. We've come here today to speak in favor of House Bills 2497 and 3052. I want to remind the committee that employers, and I represent employers in my practice, I spend a significant amount of my time working with them on how to address drug issues, substance abuse issues in the workplace, and a significant amount of time and their money trying to address issues relating to marijuana and medical marijuana. Oregon employers find themselves in a very difficult situation because of the confusions of Oregon law, which on the one hand give them the right to require their employees to follow any federal law, and on the other hand require employers to accommodate the use of medical marijuana. Most users do not use in the workplace, but many of them use immediately before going to work. I would take issue with prior testimony that there is no workplace problem, and would point out that in part of my practice I work with representatives from SAFE, which ensures workers' compensation for most Oregon employers, and the SAFE people that I work with tell me that by and large the vast majority of their employer advice questions relate to what do I do with medical marijuana and this confusing set of laws. I want to suggest to this committee, as you move down the path of considering these laws, that you may be putting some of the use of the federal stimulus dollars at risk, because as JL mentioned in prior testimony, Oregon employers subject to the Drug-Free Workplace Act must certify that they are drug-free in accordance with federal law. If they are required by this body, by this legislature, to accommodate medical marijuana, they may not do so. They cannot certify that they have a federally drug-free workplace, and we believe that the stimulus dollars are going to be part of the drug-free workplace package. So any Oregon employer doing any work on a federal stimulus package would be put to the Hobson's choice of false certification or not doing the work on that package, and we would urge this committee to have a very close look at that before you head down the path of possibly requiring the accommodation of medical marijuana in connection with the workplace. We also have significant...
Excuse me, interrupt. Could you just kind of summarize here in about 30 seconds?
Yeah, we really have to move on. I'm sorry. There's a lot of other people that want to talk, and I just...
The additional point that I would ask this committee to think about is the concern that you do not want employers to have the right to inquire about medical marijuana, and I would present this dilemma to you. Suppose you had a small business that where your employees were drivers of school buses. Do you really want to say to that employer that they may not ask whether their school bus drivers are using a psychotropic medication or a mood-altering substance like marijuana? As you work through the work groups, we would urge you to look at that and give employers more flexibility so that they can work with the federal funding and, in addition, can maintain workplace safety.
I'm sorry. We really have to move on. There's a lot of people that want to talk. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. My name is Dan Sabatino, and I am speaking in support of House Bill 2497 and House Bill 3052. I'm here to speak today of marijuana as a drug, not a medicine, and a drug in the workplace. Why am I qualified to talk to you? I'm a safety director for a large union contractor that works in seven states. Oregon is our primary state. We employ over 1,000 employees during peak season. We're responsible, and I'm ultimately responsible for their workplace safety. Secondly, I spent 10 years, I spent 3 years recovering my son from 10 years worth of drug abuse. I've seen the insidious results of drug abuse and how it affects lives. Thirdly, I'm a cancer patient. I'm undergoing chemotherapy as we speak, and I do not use medical marijuana despite the fact that I'm capable of qualifying for it. I live with my incapabilities because I don't feel medical marijuana or marijuana, period, belongs in the workplace. You've heard today that there are several instances where marijuana in the workplace is not happening. Well, if you'll just call your memory recently to a major train wreck in Los Angeles, California, where marijuana, or maybe it was texting, the jury's still out on which one was responsible, but marijuana was involved. I'm going to share with you a story about a young man that worked for us, a real story. He came to us. We've spoken very highly of. He passed our drug testing program, which tells me and should tell you that there is a tremendous market out in the workplace today of masking agents, which allow people to mask whatever drug, typically marijuana is the drug of choice, in their system so they can pass drug tests. We're just at the cusp of catching those masking agents now. It's new technology. Our drug testing facilities are behind the curve and always trying to catch up with the technologies. This individual came to work for us. He had been repeatedly trained and told about fall protection. At lunchtime, he went out and smoked two bowls worth of marijuana, about $5, a nickel bag, they call it. Came back to work, and shortly after lunch, fell 25 feet and fractured his left femur. That was on April 27th of 2005.
Sir, you're really going to have to summarize. You've already used up your 2 minutes.
Thank you very much. In summary, I leave you with two questions. Are the rights of one to use drugs in the workplace so important as to risk the lives of others? And why should the employee pay, as we did, over $180,000 for someone that was impaired in the workplace through workers' compensation benefits and additional attorney's fees? Thank you for your time.
And just to let you know, folks, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to get excused from the floor, and I'm going to take everyone's, I may be the only one here, but everyone who is here, we're going to get your testimony on the record this morning so you don't have to come back tonight. But I will be reopening the committee hearing again at 5 p.m. But since you're here, I want to get everybody on the record we possibly can. It's all videotaped. You'll be on the record just as if everybody, and all of your written testimony will be submitted and put in the respective files of the other committee members. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Wade. I'm the secretary for the Stormy Ray Cardinals Foundation. I've been a patient in this program for almost 10 years, and I worked with the foundation and Oregon law enforcement in 2005 to create Senate Bill 1085, which is the current version of our law. And my question to this committee is, do we want to base our laws on fear, prejudice, misinformation that is currently out, and there's been 65 years of misinformation presented? Or do we want to base our law on fact and scientific research? I presented to you today a copy of the U.S. Department of Transportation National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration's November 22, 1993 report on the effects of medical marijuana on driving. Now, I know these hearings are not on the effects of driving, but I think they relate highly on impairment. And some of their studies that this study was prepared by a national federal agency that was bucking the national position of marijuana has no medical value, because I'm sure the people that presented this report did not do so lightly. And some of the statements that they came up with that I've highlighted is that the evidence strongly suggests that alcohol encourages risky driving, where THC encourages greater caution. There is a statement that of the many psychotropic drugs, illicit and licit, that are available and used by people who subsequently drive, marijuana may be among the least harmful. Campaigns to discourage the use of marijuana by drivers are certainly warranted, but concentrating a campaign on marijuana alone may not be
in proportion to the safety problems they cause. And then in their conclusions, they determined that it is not possible to conclude anything about a driver's impairment on the basis of his or her plasma concentrations of THC or the THC-COOH determination in a single sample. Drug testing does not work because marijuana stays in a person's system for over 6 weeks. A person that medicated 4 weeks ago on a Saturday, if drug tested at the workplace on a Monday morning, would turn up positive. Oregon employers want to develop a drug testing policy that actually measures impairment, then I don't think there's anybody in this room that would be opposed to blocking a drug impairment in the workplace. But to base it on a urine test or blood plasma level, which the Department of Transportation has already ruled is not a valid test of impairment, would not be recognizing the science that is involved in the study. Thank you.
Thank you. And this bill would have a medical... Thank you very much. This bill would have a medical, based on a medical review officer, not just the urine analysis alone.
Right.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before he leaves the panel here, I just wanted to recognize Dan Sabatino's lifelong efforts and contributions to workplace safety and health, not only in the state of Oregon, but nationwide.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Representative, and folks, you know what? If we want to move along, we're going to have to quit clapping. All right? I really am serious about it. Thank you. Oh, wait. We got one more question, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Barron, a question for you. Also, Ms. Barron's reputation as one of the premier employment side lawyers in the state is well known. And so a question. It's my understanding that Emerald Steel, the Boley decision, is currently before the Supreme Court. I believe, I think we're about due for an opinion any day, if not any week. I admit they ducked it once before, I believe in Washburn. But wouldn't it be prudent for this legislature to actually wait and see exactly what the court decides? It seems like the issue of accommodation might be resolved one way or the other.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Barton. Here's what I think is going to happen with Emerald Steel. It has not yet been argued.
Oh,
so we are potentially a year away from an opinion. And based on what happened at the Court of Appeals, I think there's a substantial risk that the court will once again find an opportunity not to make a decision. And I believe that they may very well be looking to this body to address issues relating to medical marijuana in the workplace. The conflict has been presented to them, but whether or not they'll rule on it, we don't know yet.
And if I may, I don't know if you're arguing the case, but if you wouldn't mind emailing me when those arguments, if it's during the session, I wouldn't mind going over and watching.
Happy to do so, yes.
Actually, if you'd email to the administrator, we could all have benefit of that information.
Okay.
I do appreciate it.
I'll do that.
All right. Thank you very much, folks. I really appreciate you coming here today. I'm going to call Anthony Miller. And Mr. Miller, I'm holding you to the 2-minute mark, too. Pretty flexible, but professionals are going to be cut off at 2 minutes.
Well, we'll make sure that my fan club doesn't clap then and take up any more time.
All right. Go ahead, sir.
For the record, my name is Anthony Miller. I'm the current president of the Oregon Self-Insurers Association. We are a group of 130 employers here in the state of Oregon, both public and private, that self-insure our employees for workers' compensation. So we do not pay insurance. We pay the bills ourselves when one of our employees gets injured on the job. So we understand that we have a very special relationship with our employees to keep all of them safe. And we go above and beyond what we feel is typically necessary to make sure that we do that. It's really as much a social contract with our employees as it is a legal contract, we believe. And there's been a lot of, there's a ton of different proposals here in front of you all this session. The overriding thing that we want to say is we do not believe that we should have to make this kind of accommodation for medical marijuana patients in the workforce. It has led to a whole host of issues and problems with employers. I have give me some written testimony, and one is just a very brief example, current example going on with one of our members, large medical facility, that a pharmacy technician was making a lot of errors dispensing medications, and when they went to discipline this person, they pulled out a medical marijuana card and said, here's the reason why. So this is now the person's on paid suspension, and so far we found that there's conflicts in this particular case with the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, American with Disabilities Act, Oregon Pharmacy Board, and the Health Insurance Portability and Privacy Act as well. And I would ask if there's any questions.
And I appreciate your understanding the need for time here, because we have a lot of people, 20-some people. Any questions of Mr. Miller? All right. Thank you very much. No. You can catch him out in the hall. All righty then. I'm just going to go right straight down the line as they y'all signed up on these numbered sheets. So Kevin Hornich, Elvi Musaka, and Judy Gerzig, and I hope I got those names right. Are any of you all here? Kevin Hornich, Elvi Musaka, Judy Gerzig. Am I saying those names right? Okay, who are you?
Judy.
All right, Judy. Elvi or Kevin? Oh, Elvi's here. Good. How about Kevin Hornich? Is Kevin here? Come on up. Sit on down and introduce yourself, Elvi, and get going. Are you Kevin? Or are you just helping Elvi? Okay, good. Thank you.
I got some cards I want to pass to you, I guess, as soon as we're done with this. My name is Elvi. Thank you so much for having to hear my testimony here. Right. My name is Elvi Musica. And I would like to discuss several things. I guess we start with the state garden. I am one of four people in the entire country who actually has a prescription for medical marijuana. Everyone else has a recommendation. There is a huge difference, especially when you're talking about pharmacies. I still have to go back to Hollywood, Florida, to Miami, Florida, to pick up a prescription from the Bascom Palmeri Institute, which is grown by the government in Mississippi. Why is that? Because you only have about a handful of pharmacists in the entire country which are allowed to use Schedule I drugs to host them, to have them in their property, even. And I haven't found any in Oregon. Or doctors that will actually take care of me in your clinics, because I definitely have been using marijuana for 34 years. It has maintained whatever side I have today, and trying to avoid it brings us to another issue you're dealing with, the employment thing. When Just Say No came into the scene, I became your tax burden. I'm sure that didn't make you happy, and it sure didn't make me one. I was not ready for that early retirement. I lived as a criminal with the fear of having my children, my property, my work, which went shortly after the surgeries, bye-bye, and I finally became the first woman. Well, first of all, I established a medical defense for the state of Florida when I was arrested for four little siblings there, and I became the first woman to enter this federal program with the public and the medical support of my community. Please consider that when you are talking about not finding excuses for people not to work with you or anyone else, all you're doing is putting on a horrendous financial burden on yourselves and the families of those you are deemed non-employable. Although I do agree, if you are impaired, you have no business at that job, whichever job that is. If you can't do the job, there are laws to make sure you don't have that. I think the main issue here is the insurance companies and the fact that you cannot get your insurances if this drug policy is around. Now, I don't care if you do have a safety net. I think that's a good thing. And as I said, I have no problem with being safe in the workplace and all that. But make sure it applies to all drugs, and don't say you're not discriminating when you put the word marijuana on everything and say drugs, including marijuana. That should be alcohol as well. Thank you very much.
I verbally applaud you, so no one else has to.
Thank you very much in traveling so far. I would like to open up any questions of Elvi before we go.
I really appreciate it, and excellent testimony, right in the timeline, too. Thank you.
And I'd like to volunteer to be in your committee.
Well, we're getting lots of help there, and you may well be.
Thank you. No,
thank you, Elvie. I appreciate it. Somebody want to help our friend there, make sure.
By the way, the quality is so poor that I had to move to Oregon in order to smoke this and weed. This I use for cooking and topical.
Okay. Thank you. We'll have to get your cookbook, Elvie.
Yeah.
Believe me, sister. Last call for Kevin Hornich and Ken Hector and Jeff Bolette. Kevin Hornich, Ken Hector, Jeff Bolette.
Mr. Blood doesn't want to speak, but I'm further down on the list. I need to take his away.
Well, we'll get to you then. And Kevin must be gone, and you must be Ken. Go ahead, sir.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ken Hector. I'm the Director of Community Outreach and Governmental Affairs for Silverton Hospital. I appear today in strong support of House Bills 2497 and 3052, and conversely, in equally strong opposition to House Bills 2503, 2881, and 3274. Earlier, Representative Hanna, I think, articulated very well the statistics and stories behind substance abuse and the Oregon medical marijuana program. So I'm going to focus just on how the problem impacts healthcare. I do find it ironic, however, that at a time when the legislature is looking to substantially increase revenue to fund substance abuse programs, it is at the same time considering legislation to not only further expand the use of marijuana, but also to require employers to accommodate it in the workplace. In Silverton's hospital and clinics, as in all healthcare facilities, the number one priority is patient safety, and we're required to adhere to that by regulatory mandate. It's followed closely by patient privacy. And so whether it's in the operating room, the kitchen, or housekeeping, the priority is the same. Patient safety is paramount. Assume for the moment that you've just been admitted to the hospital for a surgical procedure. A nurse preps you for surgery, including administering intravenous medications. The anesthesiologist starts the anesthesia, and which will continue throughout the procedure until he or she will bring you back to breathing on your own at the conclusion of the procedure. Finally, a surgeon will open you up, complete the procedure, and then close. What would your comfort level be if you knew that any of these medical providers was a medical marijuana user and that their judgment or skill might be impaired? Would you proceed with the surgery? Alternatively, what would your comfort level be if you only knew that we were required by law to accommodate their medical marijuana use? For us, the problem isn't just confined to the OR, the emergency department. Imaging equipment such as MRI, CT scan, and X-ray, while very beneficial diagnostic tools, can cause severe harm if used improperly. Accurate medical records are essential and require clear thinking to be properly maintained. Hospitals, unfortunately, are germ-laden, which is why we maintain strict sanitation procedures to reduce the potential for the spread of infection and disease. That gets us right back down to housekeeping level. Simply put, every aspect of healthcare is safety sensitive. We don't allow our employees to use drugs or alcohol, including prescriptive narcotic medication, in which the strength is known and dosage specified. With medical marijuana, there are no dosage recommendations, so the amount of usage is solely up to the user. Worse, the strength varies from plant to plant. Controls are non-existent. In summary, 2497 and 3052 will enable Oregon employers to continue to maintain drug-free workplaces and support the safety of our employees and our patients and customers. Anything less will only serve to exacerbate Oregon's already out-of-control drug problem. I thank you again for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Any questions, this gentleman? Representative Witt.
Just another comment, Mr. Chairman. Ken's another war horse for safety and health, workers' compensation. He's given countless hours to the state of Oregon to improve those areas, and I want to just recognize that and thank him for his service.
And thank you, Representative. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your testimony, too, because I think there's an idea out there that somehow people want to cut people off from medical marijuana for those who really need it and whatever they're dealing with. And I don't think that's what your testimony reflects.
This is strictly about maintaining safety in the workplace, and even the folks here that actually use medical marijuana have made it clear that they're not interested in an unsafe workplace either. And that's the intent of what we're trying to do here. I appreciate your coming. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, you know, bring up, as I did last session, that, you know, when I talk to OSHA and a lot of other folks out there, there is nothing that requires an employer to keep somebody that's impaired on the job. You know, they're gone. They're impaired. Doesn't matter. So, just thought I'd make that comment.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hector, I appreciate you coming.
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, and thanks to Representative Wood for the kind words.
I'm going to just continue on down the list here. Tim Mooney, Greg Barton, and Barry Jo Stahl.
Chair,
please. I'm sorry, what?
Chair, I was wondering if excuse.
Oh, members, you're excused to go to the floor whenever you want. I'm just going to continue to take for public record. I'm going to get excused from the floor myself. If you want to do that, you're welcome to do that. I don't think there's anything. Everything on the floor is
10:15,
and then there's ceremonial. Everything on the floor is important.
If the members want to stay a little longer, I have the
we're monitoring.
So I can monitor. So once we get going after the invocation, I can indicate that. Yes,
all right.
That's not a problem.
I called for Tim Mooney, Greg Barton, Barry Jo Stahl. Go ahead, sir. I think our third one's coming up. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you all for hearing my testimony. My name is Barry Jo Stahl. Today I'm here as a neutral party because I'm completely involved and invested in cannabis. I see eggshells, I see calcium phosphate. That's going to be run through worms, and that's going to be medicine for me. So I'm so far into this, I can't even take sides on any of these issues because I think illegalizing cannabis was a bad idea, and it still is. That being said, I'm protected under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. My neurologist is Dr. Robert J. Grimm. He operated a brain research laboratory here in Oregon from the 1960s, and he taught neurology at Oregon Health Science University since 1972. He says medical marijuana is my best treatment option for my spinal cord condition. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to touch on some issues first, since I am neutral. The issue is what doctors are signing for patients. Well, I'm part of the patients that are in that 24% minority of patients that weren't through the clinic doctors. Now, we know Dr. Levesque was sanctioned for overcharging and overprescribing in the 1990s. It had nothing to do with medical marijuana. And if you want to research that further, Google Philip Levesque and John Sejo, and you'll get the New York Times article that says that Dr. Levesque was talked out of retirement to run the clinics. And in the process, of course, run my medical marijuana program into the ground. So I'm tired of hearing about that. It was a bad chapter of history. It, like our medical marijuana being outlawed in the first place, is bad news. Okay, now moving further, I have right now a proposal that I get my back wages for termination when I was fired for having medical marijuana in the workplace. I'd actually picked that medical marijuana hour or so earlier in front of the Portland police, and that was a Friday. I'd been locked out of my apartment by the Multnomah County Sheriff. I was evicted. Now, I heard the Washburn case mentioned today. Judge Neely Johnson heard my eviction case. That was brought as a 30-day no cause, and as the appeal was pending, I was locked out in violation of a stay pending appeal, as the Court of Appeals subsequently ruled in my favor. My employer was upset at me because I had cost them a lot of OSHA upgrades. I witnessed a co-worker threaten to hit a woman with a hammer, and then they subsequently gave me a raise and found out I was a witness to this event and terminated me, and I got my unemployment benefits on appeal to the Oregon Employment Appeals Board.
You're going to have to summarize very quickly.
So if you have any questions about marijuana in the workplace, one of the things is we don't have to accommodate an unreasonable modification to policies. There is a provision in the Oregon Administrative Rules, that's Chapter 839, Section 6, that says a direct threat. So certainly, one might think a surgeon would be a direct threat. So what I'd like to do is I'll get the committee administrator's information, and I'll send my neurologist testimony. Now, that was a criminal case. My neurologist wasn't...
Sir, I really have to move along.
So since my status under the Medical Marijuana Act. I've been illegally convicted, illegally fired, illegally evicted, and had my medical marijuana garden destroyed twice unlawfully.
Okay.
I'm one of the real patients.
With that,
I'll take your question.
I have to move on. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Tim Mooney. I'm here just as a concerned citizen. I believe Representative Matthews asked if anybody would touch on the subject of the illegal part of this, the recreational part, perhaps. I think it's really simple. I think it will boil down to supply and demand. You can do what you want, but if there's a demand, the supply will be met one way or the other, probably. So that's kind of unfortunate, but the way it is, I believe. Another thing I wanted to touch on, I'm sure plenty of people have already mentioned that some people won't be able to afford it if we start taxing and this and that. You, Mr. Chair, I think you brought up that the federal government's looking into this and they're waiting for some decisions to be made. And that's the other thing I was concerned with, is that if the government or an organization gets into manufacturing marijuana for use and commercial use, aren't they going to be in the same position as a tobacco company at some point? Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me we've had commercials in the past, I think it's state-sponsored, but I'm not positive, to talk about, you know, your brain on drugs sort of things, what it'll do to you, along with, I learned that one marijuana cigarette may contain 5 to 10 times the carcinogens that does of a tobacco cigarette. So us already knowing this, aren't we setting ourselves up for lawsuits? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. My name is Greg Barton. I'm an attorney, and I am the legal counsel for Oregon Green Free, a nonprofit that has approximately 3,000 medical marijuana cardholders as members. I also have a master's degree in biochemistry and molecular biology, and did between three and four years of research at Oregon Health Sciences University. I also, just for the record, am a former Assistant Attorney General for the state of Oregon. So I've done a variety of different things, and I'm going to try not to repeat what other people have said, because I will provide written comments. Some of them are very similar to what other people have said, but one of the things I've heard here today that I wanted to speak to was people kind of putting marijuana in the same classification as, you know, OxyContin or Vicodin or other narcotic drugs of that variety. One of the ways that drugs are actually classified is based on the lethal dosage of those drugs. Well, typically most Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 narcotics, including a lot of Schedule 3 drugs, actually have lethal dosage ratings, where marijuana has never been known to cause somebody's death. So there is no known lethal dosage rating on it. So one of the questions is, where should it really be scheduled? Is it really just an herbal supplement? Should it be in the classification of other herbal supplements that really aren't regulated? Well, I can tell you that a lot of those are far more dangerous than medical marijuana, interestingly enough. So when we start looking at this, one of the things is scheduling. Of course, I'm sure you're concerned about scheduling based on wanting to distribute this through pharmacies. It's going to have to be rescheduled on the federal level for that to ever go forward. No pharmacy is going to dispense it without it being rescheduled. One of the other issues that was raised here was about liability. What about if the state produces the medicine? Is the state going to assume the liability that the pharmaceutical companies assume if they produce medicine that ends up being toxic or otherwise not in conformity with standards?
Being a former state assistant attorney, I'm sure you understand the need to wrap things up. But you make some interesting points.
And we attorneys are long-winded. So.
I know we have one with the same name up on the committee here, but he had to go to floor. He's not here for me to... Any questions of these gentlemen? And I hope you understand my desire for brevity, because we really have a lot of people to cover here. So I think you were here 2 years ago. I think I remember you. Or 4 years ago. Maybe.
Or 15 years ago.
Okay, possibly. Well, I really appreciate your testimony, folks. I really do. Thank you very much. Okay. We're going to call Lee Briney, Jerry Gress. Okay, come on up, Jerry, and Michael Adamski.
please. Hope I got those right, and forgive me if I didn't. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members that are left. My name is Lee Briney. I am here representing the American Society of Safety Engineers as the president-elect of the Columbia Willamette Chapter. As an aside, I also work for Legacy Metro Lab, the only SAMHSA-certified lab in Oregon. I have a letter that's being distributed that came from our National Society of Safety Engineers. I intended to read it, but because of the short time frame we business people are getting, I'm not going to read it. You just need to know that ASSE represents 30,000 safety professionals across the country, 800 of whom live and work in Oregon. We support House Bills 2497 and 3052. There are some statistics on page 2 that I would ask that you take a look at. I'm also here to tell you that 2881, I'm not in support of that. There are several issues that arise. You talk about employers using an MRO for any marijuana positive. I will tell you that more than 90% of the non-regulated employers in Oregon do not use MROs. Requiring them to do so would be an undue financial burden. Most MROs charge between $25 and $50 per review of non-negative results. And Mr. Chair, I would like to challenge your statement that a prescription positive triggers a medical review because...
I didn't say prescription positive. I said a positive urine analysis.
Okay.
I didn't say prescription.
Okay,
positive.
I thought you did.
No,
because
no.
Most employers don't test for prescription drugs. Opiates, it's codeine and morphine. They're not looking for Vicodin and OxyContin and all of those things.
Very good. I'm learning as like the rest of us.
Yes. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the stand that the supporters of medical marijuana take, that there have never been any workplace injuries or accidents related to medical marijuana. I spoke with the people at both Liberty Northwest and SAFE, our two largest workers' comp carriers. At this time, they do not capture that information. So they're looking into doing that, but to say that it hasn't happened is incorrect. So I would urge you to not pass 2884 and to support 2497 and 3052.
Thank you. I appreciate your understanding the need for brevity.
Talked as fast as I could.
You did a great job, too. And you know, I don't speak the language. I'm just a hard-legged laborer who happens to be an elected official. So go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Jesbold. I'm manager of employer services at Serenity Lane Alcohol and Drug Dependency Treatment Centers. I've served in this capacity for over 27 years, as well as personally been in recovery from alcohol and other drug dependencies for 32 years. My work with public and private employers includes consultation regarding drug-free workplace programs, supervisor reasonable suspicion training, employee educations, as well as facilitating referrals to our treatment program and case managing their compliance with those programs. I would say under 3052, and I'm in favor of that, just quickly, that I've received over 30 calls from employers in the last several years that had a post or had a positive for THC, and half of those have been post-accident. Now, to suggest that marijuana contributed to that accident, that's still up in the air because of the issues around being able to measure or not measure impairment. My testimony, though, is in opposition of 2882, and these are my reasons. As Ms. Briney has already mentioned, the expense could be prohibitive, and as a result of that, employers would ignore the requirement because I didn't see anything in the bill that would suggest there would be any penalty for doing so. Secondly, again, because it's been mentioned many times before, there is no therapeutic dose, so how am I going to know as an MRO whether or not that person's ready to return to work safely? More specifically, under Section 2, and Item 2, it stated that the MRO must be trained in the assessment and treatment of substance abuse. I don't know of an MRO in the state of Oregon that's qualified to do that. There are addictionologists. There are medical physicians that are, and they're called addictionologists. The MRO has to be certified to provide the services to the employer, and obviously that's a service of
ruling in or out the therapeutic and or reasonable use of whatever medication or drug test comes back positive. There are no objective criteria for measuring impairment with marijuana use as there is for alcohol. Therefore, the MR would be put in a very awkward position. Many of the requirements of the bill are self-defeating, in my opinion. There are several reasons for both the employer and the MRO to either be unable or unwilling to engage the requirements of the bill. Therefore, I urge your vote no on HB 2881.
I have some questions. I don't know what a business does. First of all, a lot of businesses don't have any kind of
correct
screening at all.
That's correct.
Period. So it really wouldn't have any impact on them. If they're not screening, how are they ever going to know? But going into the other, you said that currently we don't screen for prescription drugs, and I believe you.
Employers don't.
Okay, that's fine. But then... why would they care if they don't care, if they don't want to find out if their employees have Valium or Vicodin or Oxycontin in their system? I can't understand why they would be so interested in them, whether or not someone had medical marijuana in their system. And I don't understand that.
And Mr. Chair, the only time it becomes an issue is after somebody tests positive after an incident, and then all of a sudden the liability or the risk is posed.
On that right there, then, let's... After an incident, you still don't test for prescription drugs?
Sure you do. Yeah.
Then why wouldn't the process be exactly the same with marijuana?
I think that...
I said, we're going to treat everyone with respect in here, and I'm not putting up with any more of that. Is anyone in here not understand what I'm saying? Good, thank you. Sorry about that.
This is an education process. I think most employers believe that they're getting... the results for prescription drugs, but they're not. And so we, as a laboratory, go out and talk to our employers and say, are you looking for prescription drugs? Is that, and that's becoming a huge abuse in the Northwest. And it's just a matter of saying, yes, please test for those. Mm-hmm. But I think they are concerned about it. They just don't realize they're not getting it. And again, it's the issue of liability with medical marijuana. There is no scientific way to test for impairment. We would love to be able to say it's just like alcohol, but there is no scientific way to do it. So we have to go by the things that we know, and that is that people smoke marijuana and it has an effect on them. And so then how does that figure into the workplace and safety?
How would you test for impairment under Oxycontin or Vicodin or Valium? And why wouldn't the same kinds of tests apply
for
marijuana or any other prescription drug?
Because there is no dosage,
right.
There is no strength for marijuana. It depends. You heard everybody else talk about some need a little lesser strength, some need full strength. There is no regulation of that.
And
so,
you can base the determination of impairment on the level of substance in the urine analysis.
No.
If it's Vicodin or you cannot. You just know there's a presence there.
Correct.
Well, and then if you can't judge there's a dosage on the bottle, but you don't know if they took the correct dosage or more than that dosage. So you're still in the same testing situation for prescription drugs as you would be under this, under marijuana.
A toxicologist in a lab would evaluate whether or not that fell within the therapeutic dose of what was recommended.
Mm-hmm.
If it was recommended 2 pills, whatever, of whatever, then the therapeutic dose would have an anagram range that would fit within. So if you see somebody spike, I mean, most people die from overdose of prescription drugs because they're abusing them, and then they take alcohol, for example. It pushes them over the top.
Well, then they're impaired, isn't it?
Well, they are, and that's aside from the workplace, and I apologize for bringing that up. But there are some ways in which toxicologists would be able to determine whether that therapeutic dose was consistent with the positive drug screen and the nanogram level that registered. There is no, you know, most positives for THC come at 50 nanograms. So does that mean at 51 you're impaired or not? Or for some people it could be even higher because they've been using it for a long time.
And they've built up
it's
a tolerance.
Like the tolerance of alcohol. You know, many people, I've had people in the workplace that have had blood alcohol levels between 0.20 and 0.38. I mean, that's impaired, you would think, but they were found in a, you know,
right.
Otherwise.
Well, to be honest with you, get down in the weeds in it. I know there's questions, but I have to tell you, I have to look right in the eye and tell you, I believe this substance should be handled in these processes just exactly like Vicodin, Valium, everything else. I know I let you down, but that, and that may not be what you and your clients want to hear, but that's what I feel, and I think this bill does that, and I'm sticking to it. And I don't know what more. Have you testified yet, sir?
MROs that will provide the service.
Okay, I need to let that gentleman testify.
My name is Michael Adansky. I'm the Director of Risk Management for the Stoller Group. We provide temporary staffing and HR solutions to hundreds of Oregon businesses, and we support House Bill 3052 and House Bill 2497. Oregon employers are required by law to provide a safe and healthy work site for all employees, and drug-free workforces are built by employers enforcing drug and alcohol policies, which are very difficult to create. Oftentimes, especially in our industry, due to the confidentiality laws, there may be only one person that knows of an employee's restrictions and why those restrictions are in place. In addition, this one person who knows that an individual is taking medical marijuana is often not the person supervising or directing their day-to-day work tasks. It is at that point that a company's building blocks of safety are put in jeopardy. When a line supervisor doesn't know an individual's potential impairment or restrictions and unknowingly places that individual who is taking medical marijuana into a job, such as operating a forklift or directing traffic flow at a construction site, they not only put that employee in jeopardy, but their coworkers and the community they work in. When this happens, how can we expect employers to provide safe work sites for employees when employers must accommodate someone who might potentially be under the influence of medical marijuana while on the job and essentially disregard their drug-free work policies? By requiring Oregon employers to accommodate someone using medical marijuana, which may potentially become an abusive drug, we are telling Oregonians that it is more important to allow very select few access to an impairing drug than to protect the life of all Oregonians. To allow anyone to work impaired would be irresponsible, yet Oregon employers have the choice with the current law but to act irresponsible and put the safety of those who rely on impaired users in jeopardy. In closing, all of us rely on Oregon employers to protect us while their employees are on the job. Under our current law, you may rely on an electrician to wire your house, a flagger to control vehicles at a construction site, emergency responders to help in a medical emergency for you or a member of your family, or an individual to help kids cross a busy street in a school zone who may be impaired and working under the influence of medical marijuana.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for these folks? And I do appreciate you coming here and testifying. Thank you very much. I'm going to call...
Sure.
Come on through, Stephen. You're welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for your testimony.
Let me see. Patricia Callahan, Carol Bagley, and Carrie Kuvas. Forgive me. I'm sorry if I'm... So Patricia, Carol, and Carrie. Or Corey. God, I don't know if I got either one right. Come on up.
And you did good with
Sit on down. Thank you.
Perfect.
Sit on down and.
I see a struggle, I just say Carrie's
fine. Go right ahead and stir right out then.
Oh, do they want our.
I'd be glad to. Good morning. My name is Patricia Callahan Bowman, and I'm here to in support of House Bill 2497 and House Bill 3052. I'm a franchise owner of a staffing company, Express Personnel Employment Professionals, here in Salem, and I provide temporary contract, direct hire, and professional staffing for companies in Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties. My business employs about 220 to 30 people a day, and in 2008, we employed 1,392 people across all kinds of professions and businesses. I am accountable to my clients to provide employees that have the skill and availability to meet their job requirements. I also have worked hard to put in programs in place to ensure my clients that the people that I assign to their workplace will work safely and not endanger themselves or others during the course of their assignment. Employees under the influence of this drug put business owners and coworkers possibly at risk. I'm testifying in support of the House Bill 2497 and House Bill 3052, which addresses the problems that Oregon employers have in dealing with medical marijuana. These bills would clarify that employers are not required to accommodate medical marijuana in the workplace, regardless of where the use occurs. This would allow employers like me to implement and enforce effective drug-free workplace policies. The bill would also address employers' liability concerns that stem from medical marijuana in the workplace. Currently, the medical marijuana program compromises the ability of Oregon employers to gain federal contracts because they require certification of a drug-free workplace. This bill would allow employers to implement a drug-free workplace policy, thus making federal contracts a possibility for Oregon employers. I urge you to support both of these bills, and I thank you in advance for listening to us.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Carrie Kuvas, and I'm the Vice President of Operations with FlexForce Staffing, and I thank all of you for allowing me the opportunity to express FlexForce's support of House Bill 3052 and 2497. FlexForce has been in business for 15 years, and our job is to hire employees and send them out to a safe work environment. And we specialize actually in the industry of construction, so this is of great importance to us as well, the passing of these two bills. When hiring our employees, we discuss with them right up that we are a drug-free company. And in that, we discuss also with them that when we do drug screen them, we are doing that with the intent that we will be placing them out onto safe work environments. The intent never has been, nor it never will be, that we are trying to keep them from working. By requiring employers to accommodate medical marijuana cardholders, the state would increase our company's liability and risk in association with any lawsuits where an impaired employee either injures himself and or a co-worker. It would also increase the risk to not only our FlexForce employees, but to our customers' employees as well, by subjecting them to co-workers under influence of a Schedule I drug as defined by the Federal Controlled Substance Act. I'm just asking and urging that you pass Bill 3052 and 2497 so FlexForce can keep and enforce our drug-free workplace policy. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, my name is Lance Bagley. My wife, Carol, was going to come up and speak, but I'm a medical marijuana patient. I'm a cancer survivor. I just wanted to say about your idea for a state garden. That if you do consider it, just consider there are people out there that know how to grow. That there and did you consult them? Did you put it up to a bid, or have people come up and go, look, I've been doing this forever. I've been growing forever. I know how to grow. I've tried to grow for the past 3 years. Maybe my thumb's not green enough. But I've handed it off to people I know can grow proper and grow medicine that works for me. I have bone ache from my bone marrow transplant last year. And, well, you look at me, you wouldn't believe it, but I am anorexic, according to my doctor, because I have no appetite after getting that bone marrow transplant last year. What works to cure my bone pain does not give me the munchies. I used to take the munchies for granted. I don't anymore. What gives me the munchies does not work for my bone pain. To have someone that knows what they're doing, I ask you, if you're going to make a state garden, please find people that know what they're doing.
Thank you, sir. And just so everybody knows, I let the good gentleman off the hook here. You don't come up and testify in anyone's place. You come up after the sign-up sheet as I call you.
Okay,
I let you off the hook. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. It's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. So,
my wife has a little social anxiety.
I understand that. No need to explain. I maybe didn't explain it thoroughly enough. The chair calls the people to the dais, and no one else approaches the dais until the chair calls. But
well,
I appreciate your testimony, and you're right. There's a lot of things that need to be worked out if we go down that road. I do have a question, though. You screen people currently. Does your screening include the prescription drugs as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
I was curious about that. All righty then. Well, I appreciate your testimony. I'm here all by myself, and I'm done with you, so.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much.
Election's finished.
Yeah, thank you. Right back at you. All righty then. I'm going to call Dwayne R. Grange, Dan Kuzin, and Anthony Johnson. And you may be sitting down with people that you don't agree with, but let's all be civil, and we all love America, and we know that, so let's just try and work these things out as best we can. Whoever sits down first, go right ahead.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for allowing Select Temp Employment Services to speak here this morning in support of House Bill 2497 and House Bill 3052. My name is Dwayne Robert Grange, and I am the Safety and Human Resources Director for Select Temp. My job is to assess the risks for our company, and part of that is the hiring risk, and also selecting the clients that we partner with. And our drug policy is a drug-free workplace policy. We drug test for everything, and it's a zero tolerance. And part of our policy also states that if you are given prescription medication, if it's going to affect you doing your job, then you must notify us so we can assure that our clients will put you in a position that will not expose you to any dangers or your coworkers. And prior to implementing a drug-free workplace, back in 2000, we got involved with the Sharp Alliance. That's the OSHA's. Their program is... I'll look at here. It's called the Oregon OSHA Safety and Health Recognition Program. It's called SHARP. And part of that process was to have us recognize our whole process of hiring people and placing them. And being a safety engineer, first thing I recognize and have been trained is if you can engineer out the problem first, that's going to eliminate the hazard. Otherwise, you're just mitigating the hazard or reducing the exposure. So part of the process is to hire good quality people to place with our clients was to implement the drug screen policy. And that would help us eliminate some of the exposure that, we have no control over. And to let you know, our company spent last year $10,764 just on drug screens. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, some employers drug screen, some don't. Well, our company, we only drug screen employees who are sent to employers who have a drug screen policy. 50% of our clients do not have a drug screen policy, so we cannot drug screen them.
I didn't say that. Someone else did.
No,
go ahead.
That's fine.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I'm Dan Kuzer. I'm a cannabis relegalization activist and the interim director of the Willamette Valley Normal Chapter. On one hand, I appreciate having the opportunity to speak. On the other hand, I'm extremely disappointed when I'm speaking and the whole committee is gone. I know that's on tape, but I'd be willing to bet a paycheck that none of them are going to be watching the video to see what anybody says after they left. But in spite of that, and plus the fact half the audience was here, I'd like to have them hear what I had to say, too. Because they're trying to come up some ideas here that... simply are unworkable. The only one of these bills that we're looking at, instead of saying which ones I don't support, I'll just say there's only one here that's worth looking at. It's, of course, 2503. The thing about drug testing, I keep hearing anything about drug testing, and that's kind of one of my pet peeves. The thing about drug testing is the only people that gain in drug testing is the drug testing companies. Drug testing shows nothing but impairment. But companies don't care about impairment. They want to know what's in your system. They want you to know what you did on the weekend. That's why they like drug testing. As I like to say, free or drug-free, America can't be both. Drug testing equals guilty till proven innocent, which is completely opposite the way our country is founded and I believe is the basis of our country. The thing about drug testing also is it's 99% accurate. Well, that sounds really great, but then stop and think about it. What about that 1%? What about that 1% that gets a positive result and they haven't used any drugs? And what happens to their career, their job? But who cares? It's only that 1%. Drug testing equals intelligence tests. if you get caught in a drug test, you're pretty stupid, so you probably should get fired anyway. So, you know, that's another way to look at it. Earlier, the testimony of the question came up was how many doctors in the state of Oregon have signed the medical marijuana forms. I've seen the figures from the DHS, and I believe it's 3,000. I like to point out to my contacts that it's hard to find a doctor, but it's not impossible because there are 3,000 of them. Yeah, I guess that's the end of my testimony. I just appreciate the opportunity, and I just hope that we can do the right thing here and not discriminate against marijuana users, which is the intent of all these bills that I can see other than the one that I mentioned that we do support.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead, sir.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Johnson, political director for Voter Power and a co-chief petitioner of Initiative 28, which is now has been filed as Senate Bill 812. I come opposed to bills 2497, 3052, and 3274, support 2503, and do believe that 2881 is moved in the right direction of treating medical marijuana patients the same as any other patients, which is all the patients desire. They don't desire special rights. They just want equal rights on the same footing as other patients. We get a lot of talk about workplace safety. The facts simply don't show that medical marijuana patients have been a danger in Oregon workplaces. Since the Medical Marijuana Act was passed in 1998, workplace accidents have actually gone down. I gave the committee the 2007 report of the Oregon Department of Consumer and Business Services, which shows that the workplace accident rate in Oregon in 2007 was the lowest rate in Oregon history. Also, the public does not support the firing of medical marijuana patients. Only 32% of Oregon voters support such a bill, while 49% are opposed. I provided that polling with the committee as well. And while there have been claims of abuse, and there is abuse of the medical marijuana system, just as there are abuses of every government system and in all levels of government, the medical marijuana program is still a very popular program, supported by 63% of Oregon voters. 3274, the State Garden Bill, unfortunately, while the intent is in the right place to get medicine to patients and to regulate a medical marijuana supply system, unfortunately, the practicalities of a state monopoly make it an untenable situation. As been stated before, state gardens by governments have not worked. A good compromise bill would be Senate Bill 812. If you get a chance to take a look at that, I've given the text of that to the committee, as well as polling that shows that 59% of Oregon voters favor such a compromise position, which would get medicine to patients, add regulation and increased revenue for the state of Oregon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate you coming down and testifying.
Thank you.
All right, moving right along. Patricia Callahan Browning. Patricia? Is she out there? It's my mom's name, as a matter of fact. And my mom's birthday is Saturday. All right, Patricia, we'll call you again here. Jeff Anderson, Mike Mullins, Jennifer Valley. Jeff Anderson, Mike Mullins, Jennifer Valley.
Mike and Jennifer are in the other hearing room, so they'll probably be racing up.
We'll just wait patiently for those good people. Is Jeff Anderson here? Or Patricia Callahan? I'm sorry, I don't know what it says here.
Mr. Chair, in the meantime, while we wait for the folks to come in from the other room, I wanted to reassure you that all the handouts have been handed out since the members have had to leave to go on floor session will be given out to the members, and they do have an opportunity to get a video, a DVD of the hearing as well. So they will have all the information.
I remember Jennifer.
Hi.
From a couple years ago.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is Mike Mullins here?
He's my husband, and he will be here
okay,
in just
well,
a minute. They went forth to fetch him.
Okay, Jennifer, why don't you just go right ahead and start, please?
All right. My name is Jennifer Valley. I've had cancer for the last 30 years. I've developed an appalling interest in public policy, and I've been spending a lot of time at the Pain Management Commission.
Why don't you get your breath here? So I don't want you to pass out on me while you're testifying. So we'll let you sit there for a second and get the clock going here when you're ready to go.
I have lots of practice with tipping over. I won't butt my head.
Well, I don't want that. So whenever you're ready to go, I'm ready.
Chronic unrelieved pain exacts a huge toll in human suffering, in lost productivity, in high use of healthcare resources. Pain is the number one reason for reason for absence from work and for visits to physicians. Chronic pain often leads to domestic strife and to abuse of alcohol or other drugs. The cost nationwide in medical expenses and lost work time is estimated at $40 billion a year. Appropriate use of pain management techniques can enhance independence and quality of life and reduce the medical and other costs involved. It is estimated that approximately one-third of the population suffers from chronic pain, and up to 9% of adults suffer from moderate to severe non-cancer-related chronic pain. In addition, chronic pain is estimated to affect 15 to 20% of children. The Wisconsin Task Force on Pain Management defines chronic pain as persistent pain, which can be either continuous or recurrent and of sufficient duration and intensity to adversely affect a patient's well-being, level of function, and quality of life. The impact of chronic pain on greater social and economic impacts are thought to be greater than for any other single disease entity. Chronic pain is a major public health problem because it affects millions of individuals, their families, and the healthcare system. The economic impact of pain is significant. In 1986, back pain alone cost over $20 billion in healthcare and related disability costs. It estimated that U.S. business and industry loses about $90 billion annually to sick time, reduced productivity, and direct medical and other benefit costs due to chronic pain among employees. Chronic pain is a major cause of healthcare consumption and disability. Chronic pain and its related causes are the greatest single source of healthcare consumption and disability during an individual's working years. Inadequate pain treatment can lead to lost productivity, excessive healthcare expenditures, needless suffering, domestic and occupational problems, increased thoughts and risk of suicide. These factors have driven estimates of the economic burden of chronic pain as high as $100 billion annually. The impact at the end of life. Pain in terminally ill individuals should always be adequately relieved. Pain management in terminally ill individuals involves different concerns. Keeping the patient comfortable and the family satisfied with pain control measures are primary goals. Withholding pain medications because of fears of overuse, physical dependency, or disciplinary concerns are inappropriate in this setting. And that's a major issue that we as medical marijuana patients face. The vast majority of us are terminal patients. So when people say that we're overusing our medicine, it's entirely inappropriate. That's just something that's been on my nerves lately.
Jennifer, I'm going to have to... Are you finished?
Not quite.
You're going to have to summarize. I have to move
okay.
along. Please.
Approximately 270,000 people qualify for the medical marijuana program, and less than 10% of them are actually in the program. We have a compliance rate of 99.9% based on police arrest records, but we don't have any other evidence to rely on. The Pain Management Commission is conducting a survey of patients in pain, and I think the OMMP should pay for that survey because all of the patients that the Pain Management Commission serves also qualify for the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. And I'd also like to address high usage rates. According to Drug Availability Steering Committee reports going back to 1988, Oregon has always been one of the top producers of marijuana in the nation. And according to SAMHSA surveys going back to 1970, we've always had one of the highest rates of usage. So it's very unfair to blame high rates of usage on the medical marijuana program when we have evidence going back 25 and 40 years that shows that that's not the case.
Okay,
thank you so much. And do you have any questions?
Thank you. And just so you know, this committee does not intend to and is not going to deny access to medical marijuana to terminally ill patients. I just wanted you, and I'm going to go to this gentleman right
now. Mostly, I just wanted to address the issue of abuse.
And I appreciate that too. And I do. You were here 2 years ago, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I remember you. Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, Representative Schaffler. Thank you for the opportunity to talk here today. My name is Mike Mullins. I've been a disability access consultant for 16 years. I was a member of the Chapter 31 task force that drafted the accessibility laws for the state of Oregon. I'm a professional witness in many federal ADA cases, usually for the courts. I work directly with the Department of Justice and federal government, including their own compliance efforts. I've consulted with the nation's largest and most trusted private and public sectors in the industry. Today I'm here to talk to you about the right to work for persons with disabilities and medical marijuana. I have a fantastic little item that I was going to speak on. I've circulated that around so you can read that later. But I would first like to, in review of the comments that I've heard, I'd like to address some misinformation that I've heard. First of all, Oregon medical marijuana patients must be qualified with a condition to have access to the program. Any of the qualifications would be considered a disability. Therefore, all OMMP patients are persons with a disability and covered under the Americans with Disability Act of 1990. There are many unnecessary barriers being erected against a person with disabilities, namely the medical marijuana patient. These unnecessary barriers are cause for concern, especially when considering the accommodation in the workplace. My practice in the industry has never been for the opposition. It's always been to assist risk management for entities. And at this time, I feel it's my civic duty to let you know that, once again, I need to provide consultation in an effort to avoid future costly mistakes. Such mistakes will have wide financial impact on the state and private enterprises at a time when we need it the least. Risk management, do you really want the lawyers to figure it out while you're under fire? The comments and review, Gary Conkling from AGC, I was impressed that he had a nice group of people that worked on this, but they failed to mention a federal ADA consultant. The fact is that I urge you to consider any bill or rule that incorporates creating unnecessary barriers to the workplace for a patient. Reason for employers' concern is the Bully decisions and the Bully case, and in fact what the Oregon Appeals Court opinion have already written. The Oregon Appellate Court opinion filed June 11, 2008 states, and this is in regards to the
federal
drug-free
workplace. Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to summarize and really wrap up here.
Okay, this is not about medical marijuana. It's about the right to work for a person with a disability, and that right is ensured by the ADA Act. Anything less is discrimination and a violation of civil rights. Also, I have testimony that I'm giving you in regards to, as a professional in the field and industry of medical marijuana, in regards to the fact that there is no science that the state can base any type of work on. The state garden is not an answer. More definitive research is. The state should first consider sponsoring research in this area before launching an all-out effort in production and business, especially in the area they know nothing about. Thank you.
Thank you. Are you from Happy Valley?
Yes.
I believe you're my constituent.
Thank you.
Actually,
we're
right on the
Barks.
Line. We're Brent Barks.
Oh, you're Brent Barks.
Yes, we've
okay.
talked to him much.
Yeah,
all
I
right,
thought
good.
It was yours because I got my numbers mixed up on the
That's
link
okay.
card.
Well, thanks for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All righty then. I'm going to last call for Patricia Callahan Browning, I think it says, and Jeff Anderson. Are you folks here? Is there anyone left in the other room?
I don't believe so. Oh, no, there's some.
Can you go?
Okay, now we're testifying. Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then, okay, then we only have two more left. Andrea Meyer and Jeff Pietra. I'm not sure if I said that right or not.
Okay.
Oh, forgive me. I said, forgive me. It says Joseph.
Chair Schaffler and Chair Schaffler. I'm Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I will be brief for the record. We do oppose House Bill 2497, House Bill 3052, House Bill 3274. We have significant concerns that I'll address in a moment on House Bill 2881 and have some concerns, but the House Bill 2503 is a direction that we'll be interested in. As I've testified in the past, the ACLU opposes discrimination against medical marijuana users in Oregon, cardholders in Oregon, and the law allows them not only to not violate the criminal code of the state of Oregon, but in some cases to be productive employees, and the same is true for others who use controlled substances, Schedules 2, 3, 4, and so on. And we hope there is an eventual change in the federal law that will begin to address it, as well as to do the necessary research that has not happened. And I know comments in the past about the limitations of the ballot measure, I think reflect the time of when the ballot measure was passed over a decade ago about the uses for medical marijuana. We've seen advancements and hopefully many more, but that's another time. The problem, as I've testified in the past, with using and relying on a urine analysis, as you know, is that the THC remains in your system, but someone who takes an illegal drug that morning may come up with a clear urine analysis. And so the result should be on the issue of true impairment at the time at the workplace, a concern that we share, and as such, we think employers need to be determining whether someone is impaired, be it from fatigue, alcohol, emotional distress, legal medical prescriptions, illegal drugs, and all kinds, and not to treat anyone differently based on the fact that they are a medical marijuana cardholder. I'm not going to go over the bills we oppose. I do want to just focus a little bit on our concerns with House Bill 2881, which is the medical review officer bill. In looking at that, we have a number of significant concerns, and I will start briefly pages 2 to 3, where it talks about the medical review officer must be trained in the assessment and treatment of substance abuse. We would much prefer, if we were even to go this direction, that they would instead be knowledgeable about drug abuse, but also the efficacy and the effect of medical marijuana. I think we heard previous testimony that they aren't certified or trained specifically in substance abuse, but those who are actually certified, come with a very different perspective and may not include the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes. The MRO works for the employer, and as such, we have concerns with problems regarding confidentiality, problems if the employer is then invoiced for additional services related to an employee who has a positive medical marijuana test but is a medical marijuana cardholder, if they are getting different services because of the medical review officer's requirement to then meet with them, evaluate, and engage in other services that might not be for any other employee walking in the door. The exam alone could be a red flag. If there's delays in reporting that person because the MRO has to have a conversation, again, that's a red flag. We're concerned about no due process rights for the employee, and just not sure that that's the right way to go. Looking at the safety-sensitive issues may be a better approach if it is very narrowly and carefully done. And, of course, we would prefer that we just leave the status quo as it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Before I go to Mr. Pietra, the intent here is not to verify efficacy. The intent here is to avoid impairment or abuse. So the intent of the law is not to verify the efficacy, and I just wanted to share that with you.
No, Chair, I understand. I believe that they're supposed to consult with the employee to determine the employee's pattern of marijuana use and potential for impairment, and otherwise sort of evaluate the appropriateness, I believe, of
to see if there is some kind of impairment or safety risk, not to judge the efficacy of the whatever.
Right.
Drug or substance they're taking. So,
but someone who has the
not. I'm not going to argue with you. I wanted to share that with you.
I appreciate that.
Okay, my name is Joe Pietri. I'm a medical grower, and I have 3 licenses with 2 other of my patients. I grow about 1 pound a month. It's basically enough to take care of 12 patients. Nothing has done more to tie my hands up than Rule 1085, because you can't. I don't mind. I can never grow for more than 4 or 5 people myself. And that's how I had it. It was very simple. With 1085 and the 12-inch rule, you can grow in cycles where you can give your patients fresh medicine every month. And that needs to be done. Patients need their medicine. A lot of what I hear today, patients that are being tested at the workplace only for cannabis, usually medical patients that have used cannabis are on other medications. You know. And here I brought a report from 1940 from the Parker Davis Company, which is now Pfizer, about cannabis poisoning. It took 40,000 times the normal dose for medical purposes to kill a mouse. And this is from scientists from 1940, and the antidote for cannabis poisoning was coffee. The only reason that, and here are the list of the companies that made cannabis tinctures and cannabis extracts before the law changed in 1937 because the patent ran out. Mulford Laboratories, today Merck, Abbott Laboratories, Parker Davis, today known as Pfizer, Eli Lilly, Squibb, today known as Bristol-Myers Squibb, Merrill Chemical Company, today known as American Hoist Company, Lloyd Brothers, Burke, Sharp, Shefflin, the list goes on and on. When you look at the amount of cannabis that these people imported and sold legally for 100 years, you'd be amazed at the quantities. You'd be amazed at the quantities. There is no better drug for PTSD than cannabis. The Israeli army uses it. And, you know, our soldiers went to Afghanistan, unfortunately. But some of those farm boys, they brought those indica seeds back. Those indica seeds have CBD. See, cannabis has two drugs, THC, which gets you high, and CBD, which nullifies the effects of THC, but replaces the use of benzoids and Valium drugs. If the farmers of today knew that their hemp not only could produce 50,000 products from insulation to wood to pellets, but also could produce a drug that replaces Valium and is non-addicting, I think they should be farming hemp. And here is just pictures of Parker Davis and all the pharmaceutical companies that sold powdered cannabis extracts up until 1937. So I brought both of these reports to you so that you can look them over. Last year I had the helicopters fly over my house. And I have an agreement with the sheriff. Anytime he wants to come to my house and count my plants and check out what I'm doing, he calls me up and come on down. We'll have some coffee. Look at what you want to see. You know, I really am in compliance with the law. 1085 killed me. If you wonder why patients aren't getting a lot of medicine or the price of cannabis has gone up on the black market, 1085 did it. Okay, I'm ready to pay a license with the Voter Power Act, pay for a license and be regulated in the whole thing. That's just the way to do it for the Dispensary Act, to be able to have patients to have the choice that they need. Hashish, farmed hashish, has a combination, because it's farmed from many plants, has a combination of CBD and THC. The CBD nullifying the effect of the THC just relaxes you, it chills you out, or puts you to sleep. That's why it's so good in the treatment of PTSD, migraine headaches. Nothing is better for a migraine headache than powdered extract. Not even after 100 years. You know, but and also here on this, and it has the website where you can get all this information. But you'd be amazed how much cannabis was sold prior to them making it illegal, and all of a sudden it stopped. And that's because the patent ran out. So they demonized it. They made it the evil thing that it is. But actually, it was the most important medicine that made the pharmaceutical giants that they are today.
After these hearings, I'm ready for some powdered extra.
I got some. Anyway, I want to hand this over.
Just for the record, I just drink. I'm a bud man. That's what.
Well, let
I
me just ask. Let's say one thing. Last year, law enforcement helicoptered my place.
I mean Budweiser, not the other Bud. That's one for the sunny day.
The helicopter.
I have to move on, sir. Go ahead. One more comment.
One more thing. Helicoptered my place. I have an agreement with the sheriff. He wants to come.
Thank
and
you,
check
Andrew.
Me. He can. There was a new forest ranger came in. He was obviously a Fed. Came to my house. They helicoptered it. I live on my gate is down there, and it's about a half a mile away. I live like in a prison of my own making with video cameras, 5-foot fences, Dobermans. I mean, you know, you have to be crazy to break into my house. But they came, and they called the sheriff, and they said, well, does this guy have a license? Yeah, Joe has a license, and he's in compliance. And they couldn't come into my compound. But they smashed my iron gate, which, you know, you have to have a tank to go through that, and ruined their vehicle. The vehicle was a $30,000 government vehicle. The fence was $1,500. And he did that just out of frustration. Just out of frustration, he damaged $45,000 worth of I don't know how much they used for the helicopters, the police that were there, and they couldn't come in, and he, out of his frustration, he wrecked my gate. That's the kind of things that we have, growers have to worry about, not about rip-offs. There's been just before these hearings, there's been about 30 or 40 rip-offs. But I heard the other day that some 80-year-old man in a walker who had a gun, somebody came to his house, he got paranoid, and the police killed him.
Well, we're not going to go into that one. It's horrible. It's horrible.
It's a horrible thing. And that, we need to be protected
with
from
that.
Rabid law enforcement.
Okay, sir, I'm going to stop. Joe, I'm going to stop you right there because we're going outside of the bounds of the bills.
All right.
I want to thank everyone for coming. Is there anyone who has any last... Thank you very much, Joe. I really appreciate it. Give it to that nice lady right over there. Anyone else want to... Come on up, ma'am. Anyone else want to testify to this bill today? All right. Thank you. Come on up, ma'am. Take your time.
I apologize.
You don't have to apologize. Just come right on up and sit on down.
No disrespect to the court.
No, it's not a court either.
Because I have problems with anxieties and so.
No, you're doing good. Grab the microphone and put it up a little closer to you. Okay, identify yourself.
My name is Carol Bagley. I'm with Oregon Green Free. I'm just here to say, please, I'm on Social Security, and there's no way. My husband just had a bone marrow bypass. We were $40 over our Social Security payment to get any kind of medical insurance, any kind of pharmaceutical assistance. We're going bankrupt in 2 months. We have to sell everything.
Yeah.
Okay, if you put this tax on this is going to raise it where he's not going to get anything. Because I know it's going to be $200-$300, just like California.
Just so you know, I don't think the intent, nor do I think we will do that, what you just spelled out. A lot of folks in this state get a subsidized medicine, and that's good, that we want to provide everyone with their medicine. And I can't imagine... We're not going to do that. We may put a tax on it and then set up a system where those who cannot afford it or those who need to have their medicine subsidized would. I'm not interested in pricing anyone out of access to this medicine.
I guarantee it's going to happen.
No, you can't guarantee anything because neither can I.
I do because it's happening.
Well, okay, thank you. Well,
at the
federal level, we do need to do some things in health care. So, but I do appreciate your comment.
And I'd like to say, you know, I came all the way up here from Crestwell. I left my house at 5:30 this morning, and some of these people left a lot earlier than I have. And for your committee to leave before we finished, even though you excused them, is very disrespectful to us.
Let me explain to you. We're in floor session right now.
I
am missing votes on the floor.
I understand.
Last session, I missed zero votes. I'm excused. The reason I left it open is to allow people that came that far who want to go home to get on the record. Because I'm going to open the public hearing up at 5 o'clock tonight. So don't blame the reasoning behind this was to allow flexibility for you folks.
I understand.
Not for
it
them.
It's not, ma'am,
they're not being disrespectful.
Well,
you can't be in two places at the same time.
You're right, and that's
we have
maybe
been,
we need
please
to
let me
it.
Let me talk. I talk when you talk, I listen, and when I talk, you listen. We have to continue the business of the state. We cannot stop the business of the state. It has to go on. You can't be in two places. It's not disrespectful. No one here meant to be disrespectful, and no one is disrespectful to you or anyone else. So please, when you go home, get it. Believe me, it's not a display of disrespect. So get that thought out of your mind. I apologize to you if we offended you. That's not the intention, and that is not what was meant, and that's not what I hope would happen. With that, I'm going to close, unless there's anyone else who would like to speak to this. Come on up, sir. Sir, you wanted to? Go ahead. Identify yourself for the record.
Alan Jones.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a medical marijuana cardholder. I believe that we're being discriminated against in the workplace with the drug testing. Any other medication is not tested for or used against you in the workplace other than medical marijuana as a medicine. Okay?
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Last call. Last chance for now. We will be... we've already heard you, sir. You can submit anything in writing. And I will see anybody who hangs around at 5 o'clock. I'm going to... Anyone else want to speak? I'm going to close the hearing on all the bills, and I'm going to recess until 5 p.m.